Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Govinda jaya jaya Gopala jaya jaya
Govinda jaya jaya Gopala jaya
jaya Radha Ramana Hari Govinda jaya jaya Radha Ramana Hari Govinda jaya jaya Govinda jaya jaya Gopala jaya jaya Govinda jaya jaya Gopala jaya jaya Radha Ramana Hari Govinda jaya jaya Radha Ramana Hari Govinda jaya jaya Govinda jaya jaya Gopala jaya jaya Radha Ramana Hari Govinda jaya jaya Govinda jaya jaya Gopala jaya jaya Radha Ramana Hari Govinda jaya jaya Govinda, 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 Gopala 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 Govinda 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 Gopala 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 Govinda 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 Gopala 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 Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha Gopala Nanda Radha Gopala Nanda Radhe Jaya Radha Gopala Nanda Radha Gopala Nanda Radhe Jaya Radha Gopala Nanda Radha Gopala Nanda Radhe Jaya Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman 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 Jaya Gauranitai, 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 Jaya Gauranitai. Jaya Gauranitai, Jaya Gauranitai, Gauranitai.
భక్తసిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహర్షిల ప్రభుపాదికి, అనంతకొడి వైష్ణవ బృందకి, నమాచార్య శ్రీహరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి, ప్రేమ సహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి, శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధా కృష్ణ గోప గోవినాథ శ్యామకుండ రాధాకుండ గిరి గోవర్ధానికి, బృందావన్ ధామ్కి, మాయపూర్ ధామ్కి, మధురపురి ధామ్కి, జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామ్కి, ద్వారకాపురి ధామ్కి, గంగమాయికి, యమునమాయికి, తులసీదేవికి, భక్తిదేవికి, సమవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌర్ ప్రేమనంది. ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ శ్రీ గురు అండ్ శ్రీ గౌరాంగ, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద. నమో శుభదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భోగలేశ్వరి భక్తి విరామద స్వామి నామిని. నమస్తే సరస్వదేవం గౌరవాణి ప్రజారిణి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. సంసార సాగరే మగ్నం దీనం మాం కరుణానిధే కర్మగ్రాహ్య గృహీతాంగం మాముద్ధర భవార్ణవాల్. శ్రీమల్భాగవదాఖ్యోయం ప్రత్యక్ష కృష్ణమే వహి స్వీకృతోసి మయా నాథ ముక్త్యర్థం భవసాగరే. మనోరథే మదీయోయం సఫలా సర్వదా త్వయా నిర్విఘ్నేనైవ కర్తవ్యం దాసోహం తవ కేశవాం. భవే భవే యథా భక్తి పదయోర్స్తవ జాయతే తథా కురుష్వ దేవేశ నాథస్త్వం నో యద ప్రభో. నామ సంకీర్తనం యస్య సర్వభావ ప్రణాశనం ప్రణామో దుఃఖశమనం తం నమామి హరిం పరం. జన్మాద్యస్య యదోన్వయాదితరదశ్చార్తేష్వభిజ్ఞస్వరాల్ తేనే బ్రహ్మ హృద య ఆదిగవయే ముహ్యందియల్ సూరయా. తేజో వారిమృదం యథా వినిమయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృష దామ్నా స్వేన సదా నిరస్త గుహగం సత్యం పరం ధీమహి. ధర్మ ప్రోజ్జిత కైదవోత్ర పరమో నిర్మల్సరాణాం సదాం వేద్యం వాస్తవం అత్ర వస్తు శివదం తాపత్రయోన్మూలనం. శ్రీమల్భాగవతే మహాముని కృతే కిం వాపరైరీశ్వర సద్యో హృద్యవరుద్య నేత్ర కృతిభి శుశ్రూషుభి తల్క్షణాల్. నిగమకల్పదరోర్గలితం ఫలం శుకముఖాదమృతద్రవ సంయుధం పిబద భాగవతం రసమాలయం ముహురహోరసిగా భువి భావుగా. సచ్చిదానందరూపాయ విశ్వోల్పత్యాదిహేదవే తాపత్రయ వినాశాయ శ్రీకృష్ణాయ వయం నమాం. యం ప్రవ్రజందం అనుభేదం అభేదకృత్యం ద్వైపాయనో విరహకాతరమాజ్జుహావ పుత్రేది తన్మయదయత్తరవోభినేదు తం సర్వభూతహృదయం మునిం ఆనదోస్మి. యస్వానుభావమఖిల శ్రుతిసారమేగం అధ్యాత్మదీపం అతిదిదీర్షదాం తమోన్నం సంసారిణాం కరుణయాః పురాణగుహ్యం తం వ్యాససూనం ఉపయామి గురుం మునీనాం. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయేల్. కమనీయ కిశోర ముగ్ధమూర్తే కలవేణు కొణిదాదృదానేందో మమ వాచి విజృంభదా మురారే మధురిం కణికాపి కాపి కాపి. నమావోం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణప్రస్థాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామిన్ ఇతి నామినే. నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవిం గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేషా శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్యాదేశతారిణే శ్రీమల్ గురుచరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమః. వందే నందవ్రజస్త్రీణాం పాదరేణుమభీష్ణశా యాసాం హరిగదోద్గీతం పునాది భువనత్రయం గోపీచరణారవింద పరమానవే నమః. పీతాంబరం కరవిరాజిత చక్ర శంఖ కౌమోదకీ సరసిజం కరుణా సముద్రం రాధా సహాయం అతిసుందర మందహాసం వాతాళయేశ మనిషం హృది భావయామి. కోమళం కూజయన్ వేణం శ్యామళోయం కుమారగ వేదవేద్యపరం బ్రహ్మ భాసదాం పురతో మమాం. మూకం కరోతి వాచాలం పంగుం లంఘయదే గిరిం యల్కృపాతమహం వందే పరమానందమాధవం. శ్రీకృష్ణాయ నమః శ్రీమల్లాధ్యాయ నమః సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం గోవింద గోవింద. రామ కథ, స్టోరీ ఆఫ్ రామచంద్ర ఈస్ యాజ్ ఎక్స్టెండెడ్ యాజ్ భాగవతం ఈస్ ఫర్ కృష్ణ. దట్ ఈస్ రామాయణం అండ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం రిప్రజెంట్స్ రామచంద్ర అండ్ కృష్ణ యాజ్ వి మెన్షన్ మెనీ టైమ్స్ బిఫోర్. ఫ్రమ్ దీస్ టూ లెటర్స్ రామ కేమ్ రామాయణం and from two letters Krishna came Srimad Bhagavatam. So what one has to remember is that throughout Ramayanam you will find the personalities who are showing us certain things in life and to give us an understanding that human life, if it is utilized properly, it has a very, very higher goal than fulfilling our material desires. Material desires are there because of the mind. Mind has caused these material desires. But once we cross over that and one is able to think about the purpose of human life, Ramayanam will teach us that Lord Ramachandra, through his interesting way of life, Ramachandra taught us many, many things to take note of in this human life, what is the most precious form of life in all the species in this world. So, going back to the Ramachandra story where we stopped last time, that Sita Devi's devotion to Ramachandra, that is what we were discussing at the end. But as I mentioned before, that Ramachandra's story and Sita Devi's story together comes in the Ramayanam, has been spoken by Lord Shiva to Sri Parvati, as requested by her in her second birth in Sri Parvati's body. When she was in Sadidevi's form, Sadidevi offended Ramachandra. The result was that she had to go through severe penances and austerities to understand the position of Lord Ramachandra as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, Sita Devi, Sri Parvati, this time became much more enthusiastic to hear from Lord Shiva, Sri Rama Katha, Ramachandra's story. And it is that background that we are discussing, the knowledge what was given to Hanuman by Sita Devi. We mentioned that in the beginning, what is known as Sri Rama Hridayam. Sri Rama Hridayam means the truth of Lord Ramachandra and Sita Devi. That is what it is. Now, the way the Sri Rama Hridayam, the story was spoke, the message was given to Hanuman, Anjaneya Swami, due to his special position as one of the three great devotees of Lord Ramachandra. Anjaneya Swami, with folded hands, sat in front of Sri Ramachandra. Ramachandra told Sita Devi to speak to speak to Hanuman about it. So when Sita Devi instructed Sri Rama Hridayam, Sri Rama Hridayam means the heart or the mind of Ramachandra, which was imparted to. It is the knowledge just like Arjuna has given. Arjuna was given the knowledge by Krishna. Similarly, Hanuman was instructed by Sita Devi. And the beginning, if you read that Sri Rama Hridayam, a few verses in the Ramayanam, you will find that Sita Devi told her Anjaneya Swami that after I got married to Ramachandra, we went to the forest, then we crossed the river, and then we went through the different places in the forest we walked through, met different sages, Bharadwaja Muni, Agastya Muni, and in Panchavati, Sita Devi was stolen. Panchavati, Sita Devi was stolen. This place, Panchavati, is near, close to Nasik. Today, if you go there, you are still there. It's a very important place in Ramayanam, this Panchavati. And near Nasik, and there is five vadi. The word Panchavati came from the word Vatavraksham. Vatavraksham means banyan trees. Five banyan trees who stood there from time immemorial, and that's how this name Panchavati came there. So, in Panchavati, Sita Devi was stolen, and later on, Ramachandra, searching for Sita Devi, came to Kishkindha. There he met Sugriva and made this agreement with Sugriva that Ramachandra will help Sugriva to get his wife back, Ruma, from Beli, who has stolen her from Sugriva. So Ramachandra promised to kill Beli and get Ruma back to Sugriva. And Sugriva in turn agreed to send his army of monkeys in search for Sita Devi, because they did not know where she was, and find her out. And later on, the great battle happened of Ramayanam between Lord Ramachandra and Ravana. In that battle, Ravana was killed, and at the end, Sita Devi was taken back from Sri Lanka, from Lanka, back to Ayodhya, and coronation happened as Ramachandra was installed as the king. What did Sita Devi say to Hanuman, Anjaneya Swami, at this time? You may be thinking Rama has done all these things, but actually, Rama did not do anything. This is what Sita Devi said to Hanuman. Rama didn't do anything. It is me who has done it. Sita Devi says there. In Ramayanam, you can read it. Sita Devi says to her that Rama didn't do anything. It is me who has done it. Sita Devi, it's me. I get the strength, because after all, who is Sita Devi? Sita Devi is nobody different than Yogamaya. Sita Devi is Yogamaya. And Sita Devi says there that I got this potency to do it in the presence of Ramachandra. It says, Naiva Tishtadi nor Jagati, that Ramachandra didn't do anything. Rama was just a witness, but everybody thinks Rama was doing everything, but Rama didn't do anything. Everything, I did it. Me on my own, in Rama's absence, I cannot do anything. I am Jadam. But when Rama is present, everything gets done. But I do it. This is how Sita Devi presented that relationship between Ramachandra and Sita Devi to Hanuman. There is a lot in the Ramayanam referring to this, Sri Rama Hridayam. It is one of the glorious prayers about expanding the truth behind Ramachandra and Sita Devi to Anjaneya Swami. Later on, we will come to that. But for the moment, Sita Devi's glorification of Ramachandra, and Sita Devi was giving understanding to Hanuman, because he found Hanuman was qualified enough to know, to hear about the truth. Generally, you have to remember, in the traditional system in the Vedic times was that you give transcendental knowledge to someone who is qualified, qualification is the main thing. That without qualification, if you give the knowledge to someone about transcendental matters, the most probable possibilities are that person may not utilize it and devalue the merit of the spiritual knowledge. This can happen often. So therefore, the first thing is qualification. How do we qualify? There are certain qualifications necessary to become qualified to receive spiritual understanding of life. And that is why Adhikari Bhedam, that is how it is mentioned in the Shastram. Adhikari, one become qualified for receiving spiritual knowledge. And that qualification is renunciation, the first thing, Vairagyam. Vairagyam from means renunciation from material life. So when one gets qualified, he becomes a serious student of spiritual life. And then at that time, if one instructs the principles of Bhagavata Dharma or Krishna consciousness to that person, it will have its immediate result. You will see that throughout in the Bhagavadam, it is mentioned in the third canto, when Kapila Vasudeva met Devahuti Devi. For quite some time, Kapila Vasudeva decided that Devahuti Devi was not qualified to receive spiritual knowledge. She did not have sufficient renunciation in her. So at one point in time, Devahuti Devi came to understand, and in one simple verse, Vedavyasa Maharshi puts Devahuti's mind into that and explains, Nirvinna Nidaram Bhuvan Asad Indriya Darshanal Yena Sambhavyamanina Prabhanna Andham Tama Prabhom. This realization came to Devahuti Devi. That is why Devahuti Devi became qualified to hear the teachings of Lord Kapila. Otherwise, Kapila Vasudeva will not instruct Devahuti Devi, although she is his mother. He was not willing to instruct. But when he heard this statement from Devahuti Devi, Nirvinna Nidaram Bhuman Asad Indriya Darshanal Yena Sambhavyamanina Prabhannandham Tama Prabhom. That why is this important? So important. Because to go into the path of spiritual life, there are certain qualifications necessary. Qualifications are there, prescribed by the Shastram. And that one of them is Vairagyam. And apart from that, Asad Indriya Darshanal, generally most of us do only one thing. What is that? Throughout the day, all of us are doing the same thing. What is it? Constantly satisfying the senses of knowledge and action. This is our business, whole day, eating, sleeping, doing this, doing that. Eventually, the goal of all this is that my senses should get satisfied. This is the purpose. And it is true with everybody. No one is different than that. In different forms they do it, that's all. So this sense satisfaction is not the goal. This is a lower understanding of the purpose of life. So Shastram Bhagavatam says there that Asad Indriya Darshanal Yena Sambhavya Manina Prabhannandham Tama Prabhom. If I go on doing this whole my life, the same thing day after day, what will happen to me? This is what Devahuti Devi asked Kapila Vasudeva. Kapila Vasudeva at that point realized that Devahuti Devi is now ready, because some symptoms or some signals are coming from her of showing her renunciation and detachment to this world. This is a basic quality, and without which spiritual knowledge will not work. It will not be understood by the person who gets the instructions. When Krishna was instructing Arjuna, Bhagavad Gita in the Kurukshetra battle, Kurukshetra war, Anjaneya Swami agreed to sit on the flag of Arjuna, isn't it? Everybody knows that. Anjaneya agreed. But Krishna had no intention of instructing Anjaneya Swami or Hanuman at that time. Krishna was instructing Arjuna. Because of this, Hanuman accepted the spiritual knowledge not in the proper way from Krishna. Hanuman was forced to write a commentary on Bhagavad Gita, which was never accepted by others. Probably you do not know about that. It is known as in the Shastram as Paishajika Bhashyam. Why? Because in the form of a Pishaj, Hanuman sat there and heard this transcendental message. That is how transcendental knowledge is. That Hanuman was not, according to Krishna, Krishna was instructing Arjuna. Hanuman was not supposed to be hearing that. But because he heard everything, he was not in the proper way as Arjuna has heard from Krishna. Hanuman was forced to write this commentary, which was never studied by others. which is known as Paishajika Bhashyam. So like this, in the transcendental world, there is a process also exists. And this process is such that spiritual master decides when the disciple or when the student is qualified to receive the message and is instructed accordingly. So whatever it is in Ramayanam, when you come to that, you will see there that there are, after Sri Ramakrishna was spoken, we find there that the Lord Mahadeva or Lord Shiva goes on to discussing about the birth of Ramachandra from Kausalya, Sumitra and Kaikeyi. Rama appeared from Kausalya and Lakshmana and Shatrughna appeared from Sumitra and Bharata appeared from Kaikeyi. Now, there is also something important. When Kausalya shared the havis, havis means the offering that came from the fire, she gave part of that to Sumitra. Similarly, Kaikeyi gave part of her havis to Sumitra. So Sumitra received two portions, one from Kausalya and one from Kaikeyi. Because of that two portions, Sumitra had, two children were born of Sumitra, Lakshmana and Shatrughna. But just to tell you, the power of the sacrifices, that the part that is gone from Kausalya to Sumitra, Lakshmana was born from that. And because Kausalya and Sumitra had shared the same havis, these two brothers were very attached to each other. In other words, Ramachandra and Lakshmana were attached to each other because they shared the same havis which was shared between Kausalya and Sumitra. Similarly, the share, the havis that was offered by Kaikeyi to Sumitra, which was shared between Kaikeyi and Sumitra, the son born out of that, Shatrughna, was attached to the son born from Kaikeyi, which is Bharata. That is why Lakshmana and Shatrughna, although were born from Sumitra, their attachment were totally two different ways. Lakshmana was closer to Ramachandra, whereas Shatrughna was closer to Bharata. So you can see that interesting feature of how these sacrifices, how important it is, these sacrifices and the havis that has come from the Putragameshti has helped even the relationship between the two brothers. So anyway, the four brothers grew up in the family. Rama, Lakshmana, Bharata and Shatrughna, they grew up. Rama, Lakshmana, Bharata, Shatrughna, iti samyayam, Sri Shukan says in the Bhagavatam. In these four names, you have appeared addressing Krishna. Sri Shukan says this. You have appeared in these four different forms. So after they were born and they had their education at home, there is not a lot of details in the Ramayanam, Valmiki's Ramayanam, Adhyatma Ramayanam or anywhere. Not a lot of discussion about Ramchandra's childhood. This is another important thing to remember. In Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look, you will find 40 to 45 beautiful chapters of Krishna's childhood. Anyone who studies Srimad Bhagavatam cannot ignore those, because those chapters has its own sweet transcendental activities which inspires a person to get attached to Krishna. But in Ramayanam, Valmiki did not, for some reason, did not give so much importance to Ramchandra's pastimes as a child, as a boy, little boy. Why Valmiki has done like that? That is another thing that I do not know why it has happened like that. Perhaps Ramayanam had different goals, a different way of presenting spiritual truth to us through Ramayanam rather than in the Srimad Bhagavatam. When it came to Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa Maharshi knew that these childhood pastimes which Krishna has exhibited in this world will certainly attract the minds of the people. It has got that potency in it. That is why when the 10th canto comes, when childhood was discussed by Sri Shukan in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Parishit Maharaj says to Sri Shukan, I do not need any drink or food. This is more than enough for me to keep me going, he says. This is after the fourth day he is talking like this, after 4 days of fasting and no sleeping. So we can see that childhood of Krishna has its own attraction. And Krishna specifically performed those pastimes with the intention of giving some attraction to the to the conditioned souls of this world, knowing well our state of mind and our consciousness. But in Traidayagam, when Ramachandra's pastimes were performed, this is not, obviously you can see there, in Ramayanam, the discussions are on a much higher level. They could discuss things which were not discussed in the Shrimad Bhagavatam. Because of Ramayanam's level of understanding, the people who could understand Ramayanam and discuss the philosophy of Ramayanam also is a lot more complicated and a lot more difficult compared to the philosophy that is discussed in the Shrimad Bhagavatam. Because the reason for that is that Traidayagam, the people of Traidayagam and Ramayanam, when it was compiled by Valmiki, you can see this at every step in Ramayanam. The different prayers from great devotees, even they are of a much higher level of realizations from these devotees. This comes in the Ramayanam. But Srimad Bhagavatam, whatever it may be, has its beauty as Krishna present there in his book form. Kathamayim Bhagavata Pradhana. That Kathamayi, it is Krishna's story form or book form, that is Srimad Bhagavatam. So there is a lot of differences when you compare between Ramayanam and Bhagavatam, the way of presentation. Maybe this could be the reason why Valmiki did not give so much importance to that childhood pastimes as it's done for Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But whatever it is, there is some references that a few incidents mentioned, very few, but majority of the things has been totally left out. But whatever it is, afterwards, Ramachandra, Lakshmana, Bharata and Shatrughna, generally the system was in those days, was after the education. Who educated them? Vasishtha Muni, who was the who was actually their priest or the Purohit of the Solar dynasty. He educated all the four brothers. And the system those days was, as soon as the education is finished, this is, we are talking about material education, not the spiritual education, material education. What is the material education for Kshatriyas? For Kshatriyas, material education means how to do the administration, how to manage the kingdom. And this is where a lot of complex things comes in. And if you understand why such a system was set up, only then you can appreciate it. For example, when the administration has to be taken over by the princess, like Ramachandra had to take over, Ramachandra should be trained in all ways of life, what was going through in the kingdom. So naturally they go on a pilgrimage as soon as the education is over. You can say something like a gap year these days, isn't it? They go on a gap year, isn't it, for a year or so? They just escape from the studies. So, but in the Ramayanam times or in the ancient times, the system was, as soon as you finish your education, you travel to all the holy places. Try to understand the geography of the places. Apart from that, getting an understanding of the people, their way of life, and trying to scrutinize their life from the viewpoint of an administrator, as a Kshatriya king. Trying to get an opportunity to visit all the holy places, the temples, and great sages and personalities who are practicing spiritual life in all these places, in different locations. This was the system in those days. The education was like that. After the education was over, you go on a pilgrimage. Immediately you go on a pilgrimage, a long pilgrimage lasting over a year. And sages accompany them to discuss with them different things and get things clarified as and when they travel through different location. So all the boys, Ramachandra, Lakshmana, Shatrughna and Bharata, they were very enthusiastic to travel with them, because it's the first time they get an opportunity to go like that, all expenses paid, everything. So they were in a happy mood to travel. And it was during these travels they have finished and they came back. They finished their educational tour and came back. When they came back to the palace in Ayodhya, something interesting things happened there. Ramachandra started saying that what's the point in continuing this world like this? All he could see in his travels was everywhere people are dying, they are getting sick. And he also, according to understanding from the Vedic philosophy, he said, what's the point in taking birth again? What's the point in changing this body like this? This. And everything came in such a strong way in his mind, he became totally renounced. Ramachandra, in other words, Ramayanam says, Vairagyam came to him. See, renunciation has developed in Ramachandra's heart. So it was at the same time that Vishwamitra Muni arrived at the palace one day when Ramachandra was in this state of mind. Vishwamitra Muni arrived. As soon as Vishwamitra Muni arrived, Dasharatha understood that there must be some serious reason why he has come. Ramachandra has lost interest in his daily life. This is an interesting part. Here, normally, look at our material way of education. What happens? You educate them 10, 15 years in college and university, and as soon as he leaves, he is thinking in his mind, this is my time for sense gratification. I get a job, get some money, and start enjoying life. This is modern education. Look at their education. When Ramachandra, after finished all education, his mind is thinking, what is this life? What is the goal of this life? This is how Ramachandra thought about that life. You can see in all great personalities, this mood of renunciation comes at that point. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did exactly the same thing. When he finished his education, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu realized it, that life has a higher goal. And all this, even Lord Buddha, he has shown this renunciation in him. It manifests automatically by this style of education. Whereas our modern education will give them 15 years if you pump up all their material desires by advertisement and by all the other media, whatever it is. As soon as he leaves his college with 20, 30,000 pounds debt behind him, then he is thinking from then on, another how many 20, 30 years I can have my senses gratified. This is what modern education is about. This is where the difference is. That education was meant for liberating. This education was meant for bondage and damaging. So what can you do? That is the understanding. So Ramachandra was in this state of mind. Even in the Srimad Bhagavatam mentioned, at one point in time, Krishna has shown a mind or mode of renunciation in himself. Bhagavatam mentions that also. So all these personalities showing us that his human life is not simply to continuously engage senses from beginning to end, and at the end leave the body like we have come here. But on the other hand, at some point in time, renunciation should become a part of life. And that is the point at which one can direct their mind and senses towards Krishna. Otherwise, that opportunity doesn't come. So, renunciation. Jnana vairagya yuktaya pasyandi almani chalpanam bhaktya shruta grihitaya. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find in the beginning, Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying this. Pashyandyalpani chalpanam bhaktya shruta grihitaya. You will understand your perception of soul will start when this renunciation is building up inside. So whatever it is, Vishwamitra Maharshi arrived in the palace and he had reasons to come. His purpose was to take Ramchandra and Lakshmana away from the palace to his Siddhashramam. That is where he lived at that time. Siddhashramam's original name is Vamanashram. That is where Lord Vamanadev appeared. Later on, it was known as Siddhashramam, when Vishwamitra Maharshi owned that place. So he wanted to take the two boys, Rama and Lakshmana, from here to Siddhashramam. For one reason only, those days, there was a race of people called Rakshasas who lived on this planet, and they were very inimical to the human species. They ate the human beings and they created, totally behaved completely against the Vedic principles. So they were Maricha and Subahu. They were two demons, two Rakshasas who were creating a lot of problem for Vishwamitra. But Vishwamitra could kill them, but he didn't do that. He wanted to bring Rama and Lakshmana to kill them. The reason being that Vishwamitra wanted to train in Rama and Lakshmana. At that particular time, Vishwamitra was known as the greatest authority on the art of fighting, particularly on the technology of weapons. So he wanted to hand over all this knowledge of weapons to Rama and Lakshmana. That's why he came to the palace. When he came to the palace, Dasharatha Maharaj was there, Vishwamitra was there, and Vasishtha Muni was also there. So when Vishwamitra put this request to Dasharatha, Dasharatha straight away was not in agreement with it. He decided to pull out of it. He didn't want to offer anything. Although in the beginning he received the sage nicely, Vishwamitra, and offered him everything and made a promise to him, whatever you want, we'll try our best to give you that. But when this offer was put forward by Vishwamitra, straight away Dasharatha Maharaj could not accept that. And when Dasharatha Maharaj refused that, Vishwamitra decided to walk out from the palace. So when he was going away, Vishwamitra said to Dasharatha Maharaj, that you mentioned that you will offer me. What kind of truthfulness is this? That you are glorifying about your own race, Solar dynasty, saying that all of these kings were great personalities who kept up their word. And now a request was put forward and he straight away said no. And Vishwamitra started leaving the place. It was that time, suddenly Vasishtha heard this whole conversation, came forward and said to Dasharatha like this. Dasharatha, he told Dasharatha, you don't understand who Rama is, do you? So Dasharatha was asking, so Vasishtha said to him, first of all, you are thinking Rama is a human being, isn't it? But Rama is not a human being. And then you are thinking Rama is your son, isn't it? But Rama is not your son. So two things he straight away told Dasharatha like this. Rama is neither your son, Ramchandra is not a human being either. So Dasharatha was in total confusion about it. So Vasishtha Muni had to say to Dasharatha that Ramachandra is nobody else than the Supreme Personality of Godhead who has come in this form to kill this great personality Ravana. And that was the purpose of his coming. And he should be sent with Vishwamitra straight away because Vishwamitra is going to educate them in the future. So when, although between Vasishtha and Vishwamitra, the relationships were not very good, that you should know. But that is an interesting story in the Ramayana because long ago, Vishwamitra was a king. And as a king, this Vishwamitra had a lot of power in him. And Vasishtha was a sage who was living in that kingdom of Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra is a Kshatriya. Vasishtha was a Brahmana. So Vasishtha had an ashram. And one day by chance, Vishwamitra arrived there with all his entourage on a hunting mission or something. And they happened to arrive at this ashram of Vasishtha. When they arrived there, Vasishtha Muni received them nicely because when the king comes, naturally even the sages welcome them because they are supposed to maintain and protect them. So, when Vishwamitra arrived there, Vasishtha Muni received them nicely. Vasishtha Muni told Vishwamitra, bathe yourself, all of you, in the river and come back. By then, I will arrange for you something to eat and to rest here. Vishwamitra thought it's a joke. What this sage can offer me? The hut, thatched roof, had hardly any rooms there to sit properly. All he had, some mats, was thrown around where he could sit. And there was nothing else there. So what is he going to offer me? Anyway, Vishwamitra took it as a joke, went and bathed and came back. By the time they came back, what did they see there? They saw a dining hall built in a beautiful dining hall present there. And in the dining hall, golden plates were offered with silver cups. And all kinds of fruits and hot milk was served to everybody to their satisfaction. Vishwamitra could not believe this, that Vasishtha has offered something like this to him. And Vishwamitra, all the time while eating the fruits and drinking the milk, whole mind was working on this. Where did this all come from? How on earth that Vasishtha could offer this kind of feast to them? And they were asking, how much more do you want? As much as, and also notice that the fruits that were offered were such high quality fruits, not like our golden delicious, all sprayed with all the chemicals, but real fruits in the sense that when it was offered, he was particularly amazed by the quality of the fruits and the hot milk that was served. So, first thing, as soon as the feast was over, Vishwamitra's mind started working. Where did this come from? So he went to Vasishtha straight away. Kshatriya king straight away said, put the message across and told him, where did this come from, all these things? Vasishtha told him, I have got a cow here called Nandini. This Nandini is the daughter of Kamadhenu in the heavenly planets. This Nandini has given to me, and with Nandini's help, I maintain everything going. When guests come here, I have to look after them. Also, for my own sacrifices and yaga, I require different things. Nandini provides everything. I have to ask Nandini, automatically it appears here. This is how Vasishtha replied. The next thing Vishwamitra said to Vasishtha was, you know, I am the king. King owns everything in the kingdom. I'm taking that cow to my palace, he said. So Vasishtha said, first try to be reasonable with him. He said, as sages, we don't possess anything. But this cow happened to be with me for so long a time. And normally she doesn't like to go away from here. If you take her from here, it won't be appropriate. And as a king, it is your duty to patronize or to help the sages who are executing the religious principles. Vasishtha won't agree. Vishwamitra won't agree. He persisted. So what can you do? So that's the situation. So Vishwamitra in the end told his soldiers who were with him, who came for the hunting, that forcefully take the cow and let's go back to the palace. When they tried to pull the cow just sneezed. As soon as the cow sneezed, from there came the soldiers. A group of soldiers, they beat them like hell, and Vishwamitra had to run away with all his soldiers back to his palace. Can you imagine how much Vishwamitra felt humiliated in his own kingdom? A sage has thrown him out from his house with the help of a cow. And Vishwamitra came to think a lot after that incident. He won't give up. He went back again to the palace. He said, I'm coming back with another, his massive army behind him. Whole massive army and Vishwamitra came to invade this poor sage Vasishtha and this cow Nandini sitting there. And Vasishtha had a few disciples also, students who were staying with him. So when Vishwamitra came back with this massive army, Vasishtha's students started complaining to Vasishtha that the king has come back with this huge army and he's going to beat us now. This is such a powerful army. Vasishtha said, they have not attacked us yet, have they? They have just come and stand. Let them stand there. It's their kingdom. We have nothing to say about it. After some time, the arrows started coming. And Vasishtha's students were getting hurt with the arrow. So Vasishtha woke up from his samadhi and said to them, is the arrows hurting you now? He said, take this yoga danda, he says. Vasishtha's yoga danda. Like our sannyasis have gone through danda. Similarly, the sages have a thing called yoga danda. It has a shape like, more or less like a spanner at the top, where the bottom, it's not a double-ended, one-ended spanner you can say, but on a much larger scale. All their yoga practices, when they do it with the yoga dandam, like the sannyasi's tridandam, something like that. He handed over this yoga dandam to one of the students and told them, put that yoga danda there and nothing will come after this to this side, he said. The student went and put the yoga danda where Vasishtha Muni told them to put it, and our Vishwamitra, with all his knowledge of weapons of mass destruction, he was trying out everything from here. Nothing was working there. Apparently, that was the day Vishwamitra got two major realizations in his life. In Ramayanam, very explicitly mentioned there. And these are the realizations which made Vishwamitra to become a sage. What was that? He understood that day that spiritual power is more powerful than material power. Materially, how far you advance, you will never reach anywhere near to the spiritual strength. Spiritually, you can become so powerful that no matter how much material advancement you make, you will never be able to conquer a spiritually advanced civilization. It's very, very difficult. Because spiritual strength is like that. Spiritual strength is the secret of strength. It is this strength that actually drives this whole world. The whole creation is driven by spiritual energy, not by material energy. Material energy is a subdued aspect of spiritual energy. In Ramayanam, there are so many instances where this point is again and again stressed to understand that how powerful spiritual energy is. Vishwamitra learned that important lesson that day, that no matter how advanced he was in his weaponry and technology, everything, he had to surrender to Vasishtha, one sage, because of his advanced spiritual knowledge, advanced spiritual realization. That was one thing he realized. The second thing, it's also more interesting. Who was Vishwamitra? Vishwamitra was a Kshatriya, wasn't he? He was a Kshatriya king. And the Kshatriyas are normally very proud of their strength. And this pride sometimes ends up in serious disaster also. You can see when Lord Parashuram came, what did he do? when the Kshatra Tejas, these two forces, Brahmana and Kshatriya, these are the two things which controls this world. Vaishyas and Shudras are just their subordinates. They just execute their work and peacefully live. Vaishyas are happy as they are making money. Shudras are happy as they are filling the belly. So, Brahmana and Kshatriya is not like that. Brahmam and Kshatram, they call it Brahmam and Kshatram, the Tejas, or that potency, or the strength of Brahmana and Kshatra is very difficult to control, particularly Kshatram. Kshatra Tejas is such that, like the word Rajasam comes from Raja, comes from the word Rajasam. Rajasam is more powerful through the Kshatriya nature. So these Kshatriya kings, particularly Vishwamitra here, had this problem that he'll take action immediately. There is no thinking further. He wanted to react straight away. So in the palace also, when he was in Ayodhya, in the palace, Vishwamitra's attitude was, all right, you're not going to send Rama and Lakshmana with me, I'm going to curse you now. This was his attitude. Whereas Vasishtha was more calm and peaceful to deal with the situation. But anyway, our Vishwamitra was very much, very conscious of what has happened. He realized, I am a Kshatriya today. Unless I become a Brahmana, there is no question of me acquiring that strength like Vasishtha. What did he do? Went back to the palace and handed over the kingdom to somebody to manage and went to the forest. And he was so determined, this Vishwamitra was so determined in his life. From the king, he became Rajarishi. Rajarishi means when a king becomes a saintly person, he became Rajarishi. After he became Rajarishi, he says, no, I'm not satisfied. I must get the title as that determination, like Dhruva Maharaj's determination you find in the Bhagavatam, similar determination with Vishwamitra also. He says, I'm not satisfied with this title. I should get the title as Brahma Rishi. In other words, Brahman realized, totally realized personality. Penances in the forest, year after year, thousands of years. They had such a long lifespan and such a firm determination in their mind. They were acquiring this spiritual energy and spiritual strength day after day after day. The result was that ultimately Lord Brahma came and gave this title to him that you are a Brahma Rishi. So Vishwamitra insisted that in all the mantras related to me, you must mention this word, Brahma Rishi Vishwamitra. It should be mentioned like that. Brahma agreed that also. Then what happens? He says, it's not enough if you recognize me. Vasishtha should recognize me as Brahma Rishi. So just see that mind, how the strength of mind behind it. Eventually Vasishtha recognized that he is Brahma Rishi. So that Brahma Rishi Vishwamitra understood that this Kshatram, Kshatra Tejas, or the power from a Kshatriya is subordinate to the power of a Brahmana. That is a realization he got that day. So he got two realizations. One, spiritual strength is far superior to the material strength. Materially, you can only go so far. After all, what is material knowledge? Material knowledge means you are manipulating the material elements all the time, one way or the other, and playing with it. And that is sometimes you become successful, sometimes you don't. Whatever little success you make it, you feel or you acquired a lot. But what you do not know is that this whole material energy is driven by spiritual energy. And if you advance from the spiritual side, the real taste of strength comes in there. That is exactly what Vasishtha displayed to Vishwamitra in the ashrama. So from then on, Vasishtha and Vishwamitra, that relationship has been a bit sour. We discussed this in the ninth canto earlier, how that relationship got a little bit troublesome, but it still carried on. Vasishtha was still very peaceful with the situation. And when Vishwamitra came, he told Dashrath Maharaj to send the Rama and Lakshmana with Vishwamitra, because he knew, Vasishtha knew, that going with Vishwamitra means they are going to get educated properly in the art of in the education. So when Vasishtha told Dashrath, Rama is not your son, Rama is not a man, Rama is not a human being. When he explained all that, Dashrath got a little bit convinced about it, and then he accepted. He had to accept and send the boys with him. Vishwamitra took them and went to Siddhashramam. When he got to Siddhashramam, that is where this where he was practicing this. On the way, they met Tadaga. So killing Tadaga was also an important purpose. Tadaga was a Rakshasi who was born, she was a Gandharva before, and due to some insulting or offending some sages, she had to accept this body of a demoness, or whatever you call it, the female form of demon. So she got that body, and in that body she was displaying her strength. And she was such a fearful personality for many, many sages. She was disturbing their sacrifices. That is what normally the Rakshasas do. And her children were this Maricha and Subahu. So they were become a constant menace to Vishwamitra. So on the way, Ramachandra and Lakshmana were with Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra told Ramachandra, we will take a different route, because if you go the straightforward way, Tataka is there, and Tataka smells our flesh, immediately she wants to eat us. Ramachandra said to Vishwamitra, I don't like this roundabout way. I like straightforward things. As far as Krishna is concerned, it's the other way. Krishna never likes anything straightforward, everything roundabout. That's Krishna's way. So you see the difference in their two appearances. In Ramachandra, everything has to be straightforward. No business of messing around either way. So Ramachandra said, no, we go straight and we see what happens after that. So when Tataka came, immediately Vishwamitra said, there she is, and Ramachandra shot the arrow and killed her. And one poet has explained about this, and that's a beautiful description of this killing Tataka. Why? When the arrow was shot, Ramachandra was thinking, this is his first, first time using the weapons, isn't it? Like, you know, musicians and archers, everybody, after they're going through their training course, everything gone. First test in their experiments in life, they're going to do this. So Ramachandra had a little bit reluctance to do it against a woman. Because after what will people will say tomorrow, that, Ramachandra, such a great archer. You know whom he shot first? That was a woman, Tataka. So that doesn't look very good. But here, the life is at stake, Vishwamitra was saying. So don't hesitate, shoot the arrow, he said. He shot the arrow, it went through her and came out the other way. And Tataka was killed. So how is this compared? That is also interesting. When people come to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, this is a great commentator has spoken like this, and it is also very interesting that when the arrow was shot, it went through Tataka's body straight through and went out. Apparently it is the same way when people hear Srimad Bhagavatam. It comes through one ear and straight through goes through the other ear. It doesn't wait, stay anywhere. So good is our listening capacity and our memory and our ability to absorb things. That is how this great poet is compared about this arrow shot by Ramachandra to Tataka. Anyway, Tataka was killed, and after that, they went to Siddhashramam. When they arrived at Siddhashramam, Vishwamitra told the situation that this Maricha and Subahu, they are going to cause problems. Ramachandra said to Vishwamitra, start the sacrifice. So first the fire was made, and the there is different Sanskrit words for all these things. I don't know what the English words are. So I'll just leave them. That Ishti, Chayanam, there were the different words. It started, and the sacrifice started. When the sacrifice started, Marichan came to know about it. And they started throwing, they want to make everything impure as quickly as possible. So normally what they do is they throw blood and they throw bones into these sacrifices to make it impure as best as they could. So when they started doing that, Vishwamitra told Ramachandra, this is done by Maricha and Subahu. They are the ones behind it. They were hiding and doing it. Ramachandra said, not to worry, I have learned the weapons, how to trace the people who are hiding and doing things like that. Ramachandra shot one arrow. The first arrow, he killed Subahu. But the second arrow, which was shot to Maricha, Maricha is called a Nicha. A Nicha means such a low person. Because of his activities like this, it followed him, followed Maricha. Maricha traveled about 800 yojanas, it says. 800 yojana is about 6,500 miles he traveled. And he was chased by this arrow shot by Ramachandra. Eventually, not knowing where to hide, he went underneath the water. And he stayed there underneath the water. And the arrow waited outside on the top of the sea, waiting for Maricha to come out. As soon as Maricha came out of the thing, immediately the arrow was there. He went down again. Like this, he stayed there so long a time underneath the water. What you have to remember is, in the time of Ramayanam, the lifespan was so long that all these things look some strange stories to us. But these are the real side of Ramayanam. Ramayanam is not a story. It's not a folk story, or it's not a story made up for anybody. It is the true history of this planet thousands and thousands, millions of years ago, what was happening in Tridayagam. At least you can say it is minimum 8,864,000 years is Dwapara Yugam. And in Kali Yugam, already we have finished about 5,000 years. So 870,000 years at the end, from end of Tridayagam. And this has happened in the early Tridayagam. So you are talking at least over a million years time. And where is the history for million years in the modern world? What can you say about million years? We can still say, oh, there was this ice age, or the rocks were building up, or some forests were there, these kind of things. But that's not the answer. The answer is, Ramayanam is saying that such a lifespan did exist for people. And there were people and living entities with such an amount of capacity and ability in them, which we can't even perceive in our modern world, in this present day world. So, whatever it is, our Maricha did not come out. Eventually, Maricha understood only one thing. Unless I chant the name of Ramchandra, this is not going to protect me, leave me. So he started chanting, Rama, 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 Rama. As soon as he started chanting, the arrow pulled back. So what happened to Maricha? In 1 second, he became Krishna conscious. This is the thing, what I have to remember. Maricha immediately changed his habits, immediately took to Krishna consciousness. In other words, he took the sage's clothes and sage's way of life. He decided to give up all his sinful activities. Everything was given up. The arrow came back to Ramchandra. What's interesting is, in Ramayanam, is that with one arrow, we got everything what we need to get done, isn't it? That ultimately, to give up our sinful activities and to come to proper Krishna consciousness, we are endeavoring 60, 70 years of our life. We are not getting that arrow. That's the problem. Once you get an arrow like that, what Maricha got from Ramchandra, that was enough for Maricha. He never again go back to his old. That type of realization. So you imagine how powerful that arrow was. That if we can get one arrow like this, it won't do any damage to us. And that is the type of arrow we need in this life to change our attitude in this life. Because otherwise, in this civilization, in the modern world, unless we get an arrow like that, we are not going to come to our senses easily. We'll continue doing, thinking with all our so-called knowledge, we'll try to cultivate, not knowing that there is a higher knowledge on the spiritual side. Transcendental knowledge is far, far superior to whatever knowledge we have cultivated on a bodily concept of life. So whatever it is, Maricha had to amend his ways, and he became so saintly after that. But what's interesting is that, why did Maricha again go back to the old ways? This happened later on, isn't it? Because when Sita Devi was abducted, Ravana used Maricha to become the deer, a golden deer, isn't it? In Ramayanam, everybody knows that story. So when Ravana came to see Maricha, Maricha was in the saintly dress, and Ravana was in his pure demoniac form. So Ravana comes to Maricha and tells him that you have to help me because I have to get Sita out from there. And this is my plan of action. He explained everything to Maricha. And remember, Maricha was so good at that time, he tried to persuade Ravana not to go into this adventure. Because he told Ravana, this will only destroy you at the end. But he was frightened of Ravana. Maricha was frightened. The reason for that is that generally, if you come to spiritual life, if you have, till you get to that stage, you become fearless. You always have the possibility of falling back into the material consciousness. And that is Ram Maricha was not fixed in the spiritual position strongly like Vasishtha was. He has not reached that stage yet. He was still in a much early stages. That is why as soon as Ravana started threatening Maricha, Maricha got frightened about Ravana. So Maricha had to give in at the end. But then Maricha had two options. What was the option? He thought about it in detail before he agreeing with Ravana. The option was, option one was to take the form of deer and get killed by Ramachandra. Option two is not to go for it, but killed by Ravana. So what is the best option? Best option is to get killed by Ramachandra, isn't it? So Maricha thought to himself, let me do this for the sake of Ravana, but thinking about Ramachandra. He did, and Maricha went back to his spiritual world because of this. So even if you get killed by Ramachandra, that happened much later. It was an advantage for Maricha in the sense that although he was implicated in all these things, ultimately Ramachandra got killed him and sent him back. So these things happened. Maricha was shot the arrow and there was left there. And Vishwamitra was pleased. Now he could perform his sacrifices much more comfortably than before. He thanked Ramachandra and Lakshmana for their assistance. And then a few days they stayed in the Siddhashrama. It was that time Vishwamitra instructed Ramachandra about the technology of many weapons, what he has not shown to anybody else. Ramachandra was a qualified personality to receive that knowledge. And Ramachandra took all that. And Ramachandra and Lakshmana were enjoying traveling to different places with Vishwamitra, seeing new cultures, seeing different languages and spoken, and also different different rivers and mountains they crossed over, eating different food and fruits. Everything Ramachandra and Lakshmana were enjoying the association of Vishwamitra. So later on, Vishwamitra told them their next the place of interest will be to go to Mithila. Mithila, they had to cross the river and go to Mithila. But prior to that, when they were traveling through the forest, they arrived in a very interesting spot. Why interesting spot? Because in that spot, when they arrived there in the forest, Ramchandra mentioned to Vishwamitra, this place is so different from elsewhere. No wild animals. Nowhere any wild animals. And flowers, fruits, and creepers, plants, everything looked so wonderful there. And so many fruit trees giving plenty of fruits. And no sign of any wildness anywhere there. Looked so beautiful. And Ramchandra started inquiring to Vishwamitra, where have we arrived now? Where is this place where we are now? This was the question Ramchandra posed to Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra said at that time that this place is a very special place, what we are today. Now, this is the place where a great personality known as Gautama, a sage who performed his austerities and penances. So this place is known as Gautama's ashram. Gautama ashram it is called. And here we have a business to do. Vishwamitra told Ramachandra, the business is this. You will find here a stone lying here. If you can just touch your feet on that stone, that is Ahalya. Kalyam Kalyam Kuruan Ahalyam. Ahalya was lying there like a stone there in that. And has been lying there for thousands of years like that. Just imagine a living entity, when it falls down, it can come to matter, pure matter, spirit soul as we are in our original consciousness, which has nothing to do with matter, which is totally free from any material influences, can fall into a situation like a stone, like Ahalya had to accept a dead matter. That is the state of affair, what has happened to Ahalya. How did this happen? The reason was, Gautama Rishi was a very, very powerful sage. And this Ahalya is the daughter of Lord Brahma, a beautiful personality, as more beautiful than even the among the personalities from the heavenly planets. She was such a beautiful person, Ahalya, married to Gautama Maharshi, and they were performing their penances in this forest. But seeing Ahalya's beauty, our great ancestor, Lord Indra, felt the need to associate with her. And as usual, without thinking of the consequences, anything, straight away start making preparations how to approach Ahalya. So on one instance, when early in the hours, when Gautama Rishi went to bathe in the river, exactly like Ravana has done in the form of a sannyasi form, our Indra has taken the form of a Gautama Maharshi and came to the ashram of Ahalya. And they had a relationship in the ashram between Ahalya and Indra. After some time, when Gautama Maharshi came back after bathing in the river, he saw Indra coming out from his house. And when he looked at Indra, by the very look, Gautama could understand what has happened. That was enough for him. As usual, Indra falls at the feet to give shelter. Gautama was not in a mood to compromise. He said, "You are looking for this sense gratification. You can have in all your body the same sense what you had trying to enjoy." And that is how Indra got the name as Sahasrayoni, thousands of this on his body. He was cursed like this to go. And then when he saw Ahalya, Indra couldn't, Gautama Maharshi would not give any concession on her either. Ahalya has done it, but Ahalya's fall down because of that. Gautama Maharshi told her, "You stay here as a stone for many, many years, and when and stand here and without any life, get the rain, sun, everything you enjoy as it is given to you. And one day, by Ramchandra's grace, when he puts his feet on you, you will get back to your original body." Saying this, Gautama Maharshi left the ashram straight away and went to Himalayas. Now in Himalayas he performed his penances. These sages, they were not ordinary personalities. As I mentioned before, their intelligence, their mind, their body and their spiritual knowledge was so advanced that for them traveling from A to B was not a big problem. And they had such technology with them, spiritual technology available with them, that they could transfer themselves from one point to another point very easily. And this was even known to Ahalya, what to speak about Gautama Maharshi. And Ahalya showed that after this, when Ramachandra released her from this bondage. When the stone was touched by, Ramachandra even didn't touch it. Actually, the dust from Ramachandra's lotus feet fell on this stone. Immediately Ahalya came out from the stone. And in this Ramayanam, if you see, there is a there is a beautiful prayers from Ahalya glorifying Lord Ramchandra, running to some 25 to 30 verses. Just like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Kundi Devi has glorified Krishna. But Ahalya's glorification is higher platform on a higher knowledge. It is glorification. It's on a platform. You can see a sage's wife. So you can imagine plenty of austerities and penances to her credit already. That means very high degree of realization also. Unlike Kundi Devi's prayers were more on a platform as a mother of the Pandavas. And seeing Krishna, out of devotion, she glorified Krishna. But Ahalya's prayers mixed with knowledge as well as devotion. This was the difference. Knowledge and devotion combined, Ahalya glorified Ramachandra. Such fantastic prayers in Ramayanam. You will see at so many different instances, prayers after glorification. And you can imagine, when you read those prayers, where did all this knowledge come to them? Ahalya, an ordinary woman, means in the sense wife of a sage, but speaks the languages of great personalities. That is how Ahalya's prayers were. And as soon as prayers were over, Ahalya circumambulated Vishwamitra and Lord Ramachandra, took permission from them, and Ramachandra told her to go to Gautama Maharshi. Ahalya excitedly lifted from the ground and flew in the sky at the speed of the mind, it says, and arrived in front of Gautama Maharshi in Himalayas, where he was performing penances. Ahalya arrived and paid her respects to Gautama. Gautama received her back, and Ahalya described to Gautama about the glories of Ramachandra to him at that time. So Ahalya's liberation, Ahalya's release from that cursed state was achieved by Ramachandra and Vishwamitra together. It was after that that they were going to go to Mithila. So in the Ramayana there is a slight humor about this incident, what happened with Ahalya. Because when they were traveling to Mithila, they had to cross the river. So when they reached the river shore or river bank, they called the boatmen to take them to the other side. So by now, this story has spread everywhere that Ahalya has been released from the stone into a human form and she has gone back to Gautama Rishi. So the boatman, when he saw Ramachandra, he said to Ramachandra like this, that please don't come to my boat, because if you put your feet there, I'll lose my boat, it will turn out into somebody else. And then my livelihood is gone with this. This is the only boat I have. So let me wash your feet first, he said. If there is any dust left on that feet, that let it not fall in my boat. Because what? This is mentioned in the Ramayana, as though in a humorous way, that how people reacted to this incident with Ahalya. Ahalya's liberation was mentioned like this. And then, after that, this gave an opportunity for the boatman to wash Lord Ramchandra's feet and sprinkle it on his head and to drink it. So, look at the opportunity Ramchandra gave to the devotees when he was on the planet. And then after that, when they were crossed the river, they were coming to this place known as Mithila. Mithila is the place where Janaka Maharaj had his palace, where he ruled the kingdom. And Vishwamitra was constantly updating Ramchandra and Lakshmana with the history of all these different kingdoms. They were young boys, they didn't know much about it. But Vishwamitra was explaining to them the history of Mithila, history of Janaka, everything. So Vishwamitra told Ramchandra that this Janaka, how he was born, his birth was mentioned, that actually the ancestors of this kingdom from Mithila, they come from the same race of solar dynasty, Surya Vamsha, they come from the same. But there was a very famous king known as Nimi Maharaj. This Nimi was the king who ruled from Mithila before. But Nimi, what happened was, Nimi also used to perform sacrifices for which Vasishtha was the priest, because he looked after the whole solar dynasty. So one instance, what happened was, Nimi was also not an ordinary personality. All these kings were very, very powerful people in the sense that they will also perform, although they were kshatriyas and kings, they were not just indulging in sense gratification like the modern days. These kings were so conscious of their position, and to retain that, they knew that they had to acquire spiritual strength. So Nimi also performed austerities and penances, acquired a lot of spiritual strength. Although he was requesting Vasishtha to perform sacrifices, Nimi was not a person who could be easily subdued by Vasishtha. In the sense that Vasishtha had different business to do. He was invited at the heavenly planets to go for some business there, for some sacrifice. So one instance, Nimi Maharaj wanted to perform the sacrifice and he called Vasishtha to help him to perform the sacrifice. But Vasishtha said, I have to go to the heavenly planets, Indra has called me, I'll come back and then I'll do it. Nimi said, no, I can't wait till then, I have to do it now, he said. So Vasishtha said, no, you wait till I come back, and he went. Nimi didn't care, he started the sacrifice with somebody else. When the sacrifice started, after some time Vasishtha came back. Vasishtha came back and he saw Nimi is continuing the sacrifices without him. He got angry with Nimi and decided to curse him. Nimi said, if you curse me, I'll curse you back. I'm not going to let you go, he said. This is how they were. That Kshatra Teja said, Kshatriyas, if you know Kshatriya nature, he's like that. They don't care for anything. That sort of nature they have. It's not like the Brahmana's intelligence. Kshatriya nature is such that once they decide upon something, they execute that. They don't show any kind of any kind of concession they make on their decision. So anyway, our Nimi was equally powerful because he knew what he could do. Vasishtha cursed Nimi, you drop dead now. Right now, you should drop dead, he said. Nimi also did not give up. Nimi said, you also do same thing. So Nimi died, dropped dead. Vasishtha had to leave his body. And what happened then? Brahma's son he is, isn't it? Vasishtha is Brahma's son. Brahma he was not willing to tolerate it easily. So what did he do? He said to Vasishtha, now you have only one choice left. You have to go through another lifetime. Another womb you have to go. And take to the womb of Urvashi. At that time, Urvashi was pregnant and told Vasishtha to get into that womb of Vasishtha, Urvashi. And because Urvashi got pregnant by two other demigods, Mitra Varuna. So there were two pregnancies there. Two life were inside Urvashi's womb. One Vasishtha took and the other one Agastya took. So Vasishtha and Agastya came out of Urvashi's womb. They were put into a pot and kept there. Like in Mahabharata also you will see similar thing when the Duryodhana and others were born. If you remember how the 100 children were born from Gandhari, what they did. Similarly, they were put into the pot. And Urvashi has given the birth to these two and she left. But these two, they came out of this pot after a mature period, a certain amount of time. When they came out, one was called Vasishtha and the other one got the body of Agastya. But Vasishtha became a little bit upset about this because to take birth from a pot is not a very... somebody asks you, who is your mother? Or that pot is my mother. This will be the answer. So Vasishtha didn't like it. But Agastya said, I will accept that. I don't have a problem. Therefore, another name given to Agastya is Kumbha Sambhava. Because they come from a Kumbham. He's called Kumbha Sambhava. In the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when you're talking about Ajamila's story, what did Sri Shukan say about Agastya? He was called as Kumbha Sambhava, not as Agastya. Agastya is not mentioned their name. Name mentioned is Kumbha Sambhava. But Vasishtha Muni didn't get that. Brahma told Vasishtha, you won't get it, you'll stay as Vasishtha. But Agastya will become Kumbha Sambhava. So Vasishtha Muni had to go through this situation. So Nimi dropped dead here. So what is to be done now? There is no king. So his body was churned. Like we did, remember in the Bhagavatam, you remember the Prithviraj story? His body was churned. And from there, Janaka was born. So in other words, Janaka Maharaj didn't have a proper father or mother. Janaka, so all of them who came from that. The interesting thing was that because they were born like this, they were all self-realized from the beginning. They didn't have any bodily concept of life. Janaka didn't have any bodily concept. They were all householders. At the same time, they were all liberated souls. The kings of Mithila. And because the body was, this chaining in Sanskrit is called Madhanam. And because Madhanam was done on Nimi Maharaj's body, that place was called as Mithila. That is how the name Mithila came to that place. And that's where Sita Devi was there. So the whole history was told by Vishwamitra to Ramachandra and Lakshmana about the history of this Mithila, history of Nimi Maharaj, and also mentioned to him, Janaka Maharaj's daughter, Sita Devi, is ready for marriage. And not only that, to marry Sita Devi, one has to break the bow which was kept by Janaka Maharaj. And that bow is a bow given by Lord Shiva. I think it's echoing. Lord Shiva has given that. It's known as the Maheshwara Chapam. And this was the same bow which Lord Shiva has used in burning the three Tripurams. If you remember, I think it is in the sixth canto or seventh canto. Yes, seventh canto, 11th chapter is the Tripura Dahanam. That is the three Maya Asuras. They decided to destroy the earthly planet, and in three different aeroplanes, gold, silver and iron aeroplanes, they started fighting. And eventually demigods requested Lord Shiva to kill them, which Lord Shiva did. And this was the bow that he has used. So that bow was presented to Janaka. And Janaka was keeping that bow in his palace. And it was such a heavy bow, normal people could not operate it. Only Lord Shiva could handle it. So Ramachandra was told by Vishwamitra that unless one lifts the bow and shoot an arrow from that, one will not become qualified to marry Sita Devi. So by now, this arrangement by Janaka Maharaj has been known to so many kings, and many Kshatriya kings have come there and they have tried and they all failed and they have gone away. It was at that time Vishwamitra arrives there with Sita Devi, with Rama and Lakshmana, and Janaka Maharaj came to know about them. And Janaka Maharaj knew who Sita Devi was. Sita Devi is Mahalakshmi herself from the spiritual world. Narada Muni has already instructed Janaka Maharaj that Sita Devi will have to be married to the Supreme Lord who will come here as Lord Ramachandra, and that she should be married to him. So when Ramachandra arrived with Lakshmana and Vishwamitra, Janaka Maharaj was naturally very pleased to marry Sita Devi to Ramachandra. But at the same time, because this precondition was set that only one who can lift the bow and shoot can be married to, Ramachandra had to do that. So next day, after they arrived, with the permission of Vishwamitra and Janaka Maharaj, Ramachandra quickly carried out what was required. It says in the Ramayanam that something like 4,000 people or something had to lift that bow. It was such a... What it meant basically was there were so many people involved to carry that bow from one place to another. It was such a heavy bow that Ramachandra handled it in such a easy way that Sita Devi was to be married to Ramachandra. As soon as Janaka Maharaj came to know what has happened, he was so pleased about it. He sent a message to Ayodhya to bring Dasharatha Maharaj and the other Bharata and Shatrughna also. And the four marriages happened same time. That his own daughter, Janaka Maharaj's daughter, Urmila, was married to Lakshmana. And Sita Devi, who was born from the earth, was married to Ramchandra. And Shudakirti and Mandavi were married to Bharata and Shatrughna. So like this, all marriages happened and they left Mithila. They left Mithila and they were on their way back to Ayodhya. So in the Balakandam of Ramayanam, of the seven cantos, Balakandam is the first canto. This finishes with the next incident, which is the meeting with Lord Parashurama. Parashurama, by now, has become a terror. Terror in the sense that, if you remember, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it will come later, in the ninth canto itself, this incarnation of Krishna has a long history. His father was Jamadagni, and mother was Renuka. So one day, Renuka went into the river to fetch water for Jamadagni to perform the Sandhya Vandanam and for the evening Sandhya worship. But Renuka, when she went there, she got somehow her mind, lost her control on the mind, and some bad thoughts came to her. And Jamadagni, sitting in the ashram, realized that Renuka has been delayed and something has gone wrong. So as soon as they came back, first thing he told Parashuram was the son, kill her straight away. So Parashuram killed Renuka. And this is the personality of Parashuram. And why is this Parashuram such an important person is, this Parashuram has done such things which nobody else has done in this world. There are so many kings who appeared in this world, who conquered many lands, Alexander and so many others. And there are many others who have done such wonderful activities in this world. But this Parashuram is one personality who 21 times went around the whole planet and killed the Kshatriyas and told everyone that I don't want to see one Kshatriya in this world. He was such a personality. Because to fight with Kartavirya Arjuna, not only Kartavirya Arjuna, that because Kartavirya Arjuna did such things to him, that he decided to revenge in this way, that he decided to kill all the Kshatriyas in this world. And due to the fear of Parashuram, Kshatriyas left from there and started fleeing to other countries. Srila Prabhupada says in one instance that many of the descendants of these Kshatriyas or the current or the ancestors of the population in the Western world. So whatever it is, Parashuram was unforgiving. No question of any concession to anybody. So our Parashuram decided that Kshatriya should be killed. He could not tolerate any Kshatriya. That was his nature. He decided that once for all, he will wipe out Kshatriyas from this world to such an extent. Why he became so powerful is because at the end, after killing all the Kshatriyas, how did he kill them? He brought them all into the place known as Kurukshetram today. What is known as Kurukshetram today? The original name was known as Samanda Panchakam. That was the name of that place. There are many people who have killed many kings. What he has done? He brought all these kings, cut, slit their throat and put all the blood into a lake, form a big lake there. Rakta Hridam, it's mentioned like that in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So not only he made this lake from the blood of the Kshatriyas, and he also said, this place will become a place of great pilgrimage. Can you imagine? After doing all these things, he said, this is a place of pilgrimage. This is Parashuram. And in the 10th canto, you will see at one instance, Krishna from Dwaraka, along with the gopis from Vrindavan, all the queens from Dwaraka, Vasudev, Devaki Devi, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, they were all brought to this place for a solar eclipse. That is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It happened at this place, this spot. And that is Parashuram. No one else could do such a thing. So this Parashuram has more or less winding up his pastimes in this world. He is also an expansion of Krishna. This is the interesting thing. And here we have Lord Ramchandra, who is a Kshatriya, equally powerful, not more powerful than our Parashuram, has come here. And they are going to meet each other on their way. So what was happened? Dasharatha was frightened of Parashuram. Why? Already Dasharatha has heard enough about this Parashuram. If anybody told Dasharatha Parashuram is on his way, he will take another route and go to the other way. So what this Dasharatha has done was, Dasharatha has made an arrangement with Jadayu, the bird we are talking about. This Jadayu was a friend of Dasharatha. And he had the capacity to fly so high and had such a good vision. Gridhradrishti, it's called, listen, the eye of the eagle, could see from miles high what's going on and where Parashuram is. So first, he was something like a global positioning system there in the sky to keep an eye on Parashuram for Dasharatha. GPS, as they say in the car, isn't it? You put it on and tell you where you are. So whatever it is, like when you drive through certain places in the Middle East, because they have no proper facilities to monitor, they have this system of finding out where the exact location is, where you are. So this was like a GPS on Parashuram for Dasharatha. And he constantly reported to Dasharatha where Parashuram is, so that he keeps away, always praying to him that let him not disturb me. Because he knew that he couldn't fight with Parashuram, although Dasharatha was such a powerful king. So this is the most interesting thing. So here we are, Vishwamitra, Dasharatha, Sri Ramachandra, Lakshmana, they are coming on their way to Ayodhya. At that time, there were some bad omens. Now generally in those days, when the kings travel, they will take with them personalities like this, their own advisors. These advisors are very knowledgeable in the sense, they will look at the material nature and they can tell you what is coming, good or bad. They are able to predict. It's all mentioned in the Ramayana very nicely, that they were able to alert the king, something bad is going to happen, or something good is going to happen. So Vasishtha was also in that. So Dasharatha Maharaj started consulting Vasishtha. Vasishtha said, yes, there is some bad omens coming, and I can tell you that will also go away very soon. It won't last very long. Before they finished the conversation, within a short time, they could see a very, very glowing effulgence coming from on their way. And it was such a roaring sound, and a personality who was so powerful was approaching towards them. As soon as Dasharatha realized it was Parashuram, as he was told, he didn't say, normally Dasharatha won't give in easily, protect. He only prayed to Parashuram to protect him, give him shelter. This exactly like our Kali took shelter of Parikshit, Exactly the same way. Please give me protection. This is all he said to Parashuram. But Ramachandra didn't care. He doesn't know what protection. That's what Ramachandra is saying. So Parashuram and our Ramachandra meet each other. Parashuram says to Ramachandra, "Who are you?" He said, "I am Ram." "You are Ram?" he says. "There is no other second Ram in this world," he says. Parashuram's answers to Ramachandra is like this. "You are the one who is wandering around saying the name that you are Rama. And you, are you the one who broke that my spiritual master's bow in Janaka's palace?" By now Parashuram had come to know about breaking the Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is Parashuram's spiritual master. So he was trained in Kailas by Lord Shiva himself. So you can imagine what knowledge he had. So Parashuram said to Ramachandra that two Ramachandras don't exist in this world, he said. There will be only one Rama, he said. So if you are that, claiming yourself to be, after all you are another Kshatriya, isn't it? He said. "I heard about you. You are a Kshatriya." So you could see the contemptuous way he spoke about Kshatriyas. Parashuram's attitude was like that towards Kshatriya. But Ramachandra was not willing to give in. But Ramachandra kept quiet, didn't say anything about it. But it's Lakshmana who got upset about it. So when Parashuram said to him, "I also heard that you killed a woman also as your first shot. You killed a woman, didn't you?" he said. So that time Lakshmana thought, this is getting a bit funny now. I'm not going to tolerate this. He said to Parashuram straight away, "But I didn't kill my mother," he said. "It's better that I kill somebody else than killing my own mother," he said. So this is the type of conversation between Lakshmana and Parashuram. Ramachandra was still looking at Parashuram. What is he next he wants to do? So Parashuram said, "If that is the case, show me how you're going to shoot the arrow with this bow, if you can bend this bow." And Ramachandra didn't take much time. He could handle that bow. And at that time, it was the Vaishnava Chapam, which was Parashurama was carrying. Parashurama understood who Ramachandra is. And there is some of the most glorious prayers of Ramachandra in Ramayanam from Parashurama's side. Just like we talked about Ahalya's prayers, now there is a glorious prayers of Ramachandra by Parashurama in the Ramayanam. It was after that Parashuram asked for forgiveness and realized who he was, because it's the same supreme potency of Krishna that is both in Ramachandra as well as in Parashuram. Parashuram transmitted the potency back to Ramachandra's body, asked for forgiveness, glorified him and left the spot and went to Mahendra Parvatam for performing his penances further from there. So that is how Parashuram's that meeting finishes. And Dasharatha, you can imagine what sort of situation he was in. After this incident, Dasharatha started thinking about Ramachandra. Ramachandra is definitely not an ordinary person. As I used to think, he is my son and I am attached to him and I have to look after him. All the normal symptoms of a father. But now he realized that the son can look after me better than me looking after him. And then they went back to the Ayodhya's palace. So that is where that Balakandam finishes. Then we move on to the next kandam in the Ramayanam. But prior to that, I have to read one chapter at least from the Srimad Bhagavatam of these earlier pastimes of Ramachandra. Shri Shuka Uvacham Gatvanga Durga Bahuscham Rekhustasmal Pradushravaham Ajastado Maharajastasmat Dasharatho Bhaval Tasyabhi Bhagavanesha Sakshal Brahma Mayo Hari Amsham Shena Chadurdhagal Putratvam Prarthita Surehi Rama Lakshmana Bharata Shatrughna Iti Samyayam Tasya Anucharidam Raja Rishabhistatva Darshibhi Shrutam Hivarnidam Bhuri Tvaya Sita Padir Muhum Guru Varkte Tekta Raju Vajaradanivanam Balma Badhyam Priyayam Pani Sparsha Kshamabhyam Mrajita Padajo Yo Harindra Anujabhyam Vairupyam Shurpanakhyam Priyavirahirusharu Vidabhru Vijrambha Trastabdir Bhadrasedu Haradavadhana Kosalendro Vadanam Vishwamitradvareyena Marichadhyanishajara Pashyado Lashmana Seva Hada Nairada Pungavam Yo Loka Vira Samido Danureshamugram Sita Swayam Varagrihe Trishado Banidam Adaya Balaga Jalila Viveshu Yashtim సంజీకృతం నృప విగ్రశ్య ప్రపంచ మధ్యేం జిత్వానురూపగుణశీలవయోంగరూపాం సీతాభిదాం శ్రియమురస్ అభిలబ్ధమానాం మార్గే వ్రజన్ భృగుపదేర్వినయ ప్రరూఢం దర్పం మహీమహృదయ స్త్రీరాజబీజాం యా సత్యమాశపరివీత విదుర్నిదేశం స్త్రైణస్య చాపి శిరసా జగృహే సభార్యాః రాజ్యం శ్రియం ప్రణయిన సుహృదో నివాసం త్యక్త్వాయయౌ వనమసూనివ ముక్తసంగాః రక్షస్వసుర్వ్యకృతరూపమశుద్ధబుద్ధే తస్యాఖర త్రిశిరదూషణ ముఖ్యబంధూన్ జగ్నే చతుర్దశ సహస్రమపారణీయం కోదండవాణి రడమానమువాసకృచ్ఛ్రం సీతాకథాశ్రవణదీపితహృచ్ఛ్రయేణ సృష్టం విలోక్య నృపదే దశగంధరేణ జగ్నే అల్భుతైన్ అల్భుతైనైవ పుషా శమదోపకృష్టో మారీచమాశు విశిఖేన యథా కుముగ్రాః రక్షోథమేన వ్రగవన్ దిపినే సమక్షం వైదేహ రాజదుహితర్యపయాపదాయాం భ్రాత్రావనే కృపణవల్ ప్రియయా విముక్త స్త్రీ సంగీనాం గతిమిది ప్రథయా చచారాం దగ్ధ్వాత్మకృత్య హతకృత్యమహం కబంధం సఖ్యం విదాయ కభిర్దైదా గదిం తై బుద్ధ్వాద భారిని హదే ప్లవగేంద్ర సైన్యర్ వేలామగాల్ సమనుజోజ భవార్చిదాంఘ్రిం యద్రోష విభ్రమ వివృత కటాక్షపాద సంభ్రాంత నక్రమకరో భయఘీర్ణ ఘోషాః సింధు శిరస్యర్హణం పరిగృహ్య రూపీ పాదారవిందం ఉపగమ్య బభాషమేదల్ నత్వా వయం జడది యోను విదామ భూమన్ కూటస్థమాదిపురుషం జగదామధీశం యల్ సత్వద సురగణ రజస ప్రజేష మన్యోశ్చ భూతపదయ స భవాన్ గుణేశాః కామం ప్రయాహి జహి విశ్రవసో వహహం త్రైలోక్య రావణమవాప్నుహి వీరపత్నిం బద్నీహి సేతుమిహదే యశసో విదత్యై గాయంది దిగ్విజయినో యముపేత్యభూపాః బద్ధోధదౌ రఘుపతిర్వివిధాద్రిగూఢై సేతుం కపీంద్ర కురకుంభిద భూరుహాంగై సుగ్రీవనీల హనుమల్ ప్రముఖైరనీగైర్ లంఘాం విభీషణ దృశా విశదగ్రదగ్ధాం సా వానరేంద్రబలరుద్ధ విహారగోష్ఠ శ్రీద్వార గోపుర సదోవళభీ విదంగాః నిర్భజ్యమాన దిషణద్వజ హేమకుంభం శృంగాడగా గజకులే హృదనీవ ఘూర్ణాం రక్షపదిస్తదవలోక్య నిఘుంభకుంభ ధూమ్రాక్ష దుర్ముఖ సురాందనరాంధకాదీన్ పుత్రం హ్రహస్తమధిగాయ విగంబనాదీన్ సర్వానుగాన్ సమహినోధద కుంభకర్ణం తాం యాధుదాయ ప్రదనామ శిశూలజామం ప్రాసష్టిశక్తి శరదోమర గద్గదుర్గాం సుగ్రీవ లక్ష్మణమరల్ సుదగంధమాదం నీలాంగదక్ష పనసాదిభిరన్యుదోగాల్ తే నీగవారుగుపదేరభిపత్య సర్వే ద్వంద్వం వరూదమిభవతిరథాశ్వయోధైః జగ్నుర్ధ్రుమైర్గిరిగదేషు విరంగదాభ్యాం సీతాభిభిర్హర్షహతమంగ బహూర రావణేశాన్ రక్షపది సువనాష్టిమవేక్ష్యరుష్టా ఆరుహ్య యానకథోపి ససార రామం స్వల్స్యందనే ద్విమతి మాదలినోన్వదీరే మాదలినోనోపనీదే విభ్రాజమానమహనం నిషదై క్షురప్రైః రామస్తమాహ పురుషాదపురీషయన్నం కాందాసమక్షమ సదాపహృదాశ్వవల్తే త్యక్తత్రవస్య బలమద్య జుగుప్సిదస్య యచ్ఛామి కాలమివ కర్తురలంఘ్య వీర్యాః ఏవం క్షిబందనుషి సందిదముల్ససర్జ బాణం స వజ్రవివదద్యదయం బిభేద సోశ్రగ్వమన్ దశముఖేర్న్యపదద్విమానాం ధాహేది జల్పది జనే సుహృదీవరిక్తాం తదో నిష్క్రమ్య లంగాయాం యాదుధాన్య సహస్రశ మండోదర్యాం సమం తస్మిన్ ప్రదాత్యాం ప్రదత్యం ఉపాద్రవల్ స్వాన్ స్వాన్ బంధున్ పరిశుజ్యాం లక్ష్మణేక్షూభిర అర్దిదాన్ రుదు స్వస్వరం దీనాద్యం ఆత్మానమాత్మనా హాహదాస్మోయం నాథ లోకరావణ రావణ కమ్యయాచరణం లంగా త్వద్విహీనా పరార్దిదాం నైవం వేద మహాభాగా భవాన్ కామవశం గదా తేజోనుభావం సీతాయాం యేన నీతో దశామి మాం కృదేషా విధవాలంగా వయం చ కులనందన దేహం కృతోన్యం కృద్ధ్రాణాం ఆత్మా నరగహేతవే శ్రీశువాచ స్వానాం విభీషణశ్చక్రే కోసలేంద్రానుమోదిద పితృమేధవిధానేన ఇదుక్తం సాంబరాయికం తదో దదర్శ భగవాన్ అశోకవనికాశ్రమే క్షామాం సువిరహ వ్యాధిం శింషభామూలమాస్థితాం రామ ప్రేతమాం భార్యాం దీనాం వీక్ష్యానుగంబద ఆత్మసందర్శనాహ్లాదం వికసన్ముఖమంగజాం ఆరోప్య ఆరురుహేయానం భ్రాతృభ్యాం హనుమద్యుదా విభీషణాయ భగవాన్ దత్వా రక్షో గణేశదాం లింగామాయిష్టకల్పానం యయౌ చీర్ణవ్రతం పురీం అవగీర్యమాణ కుసుమే లోకమాలార్పితై పథి బగీయమాన జరిదం శతృత్యాదిర్ముదా గోమూత్రయావగం శుత్వ ఆభ్రాదనం వల్కలాంబరం మహాకారుణ్యోదప్య జలిలం సండిలేశయం అద ప్రాప్తమాకర్ణ్యం పౌరామాతి పురోహితై పాదుకే శిరసన్యస్య రామం ప్రత్యుద్యుతో అగ్రజం నందిగ్రామాసు శిబిర గీతవాదిత్రనిస్వనై బ్రహ్మఘోషేణ జమహు పాద్వర్బ్రహ్మవాదిభి స్వర్ణకక్షపదాగాభిర్హేమై చిత్రధ్వజైరథై సదశ్వైరుక్మసన్నారై హర్భడై పురణర్వమభి శోణిభిర్వారముఖ్యాభిర్వృత్తిశ్చైవ పదానుగై పారమేష్ట్యానుపాదాయ పణ్యానిచ్చావజానిజ పాదయోనివదల్ప్రేమణ ప్రక్లిన్న హృదయక్షణ పాదుకేన్యస్తి వరద ప్రాంజలిర్బాష్పలోచన తమాశ్లిష్టజరం దోర్భ్యాం స్నాపయన్ నేత్రయేర్జలై రామో లక్ష్మణ సీతాభ్యాం విప్రేభ్యో అర్హ సత్తమాః తేభ్య స్వయం నమశ్చక్రే ప్రజాభిశ్చ నమస్కృతాం ధున్యందముత్తరాసంగన్ పదిం వీక్షిరాగతం ఉత్తరా కోసలా మాల్యే కిరందోనందోర్ముదాం పాదుకే భరతో గృహణ చామర వ్యజనోత్తమే విభీషణ సుసగ్రీవా శ్వేతఛత్రం అరుల్సుదాం ధన్యుర్నిషంగా శత్రుఘ్న సీతా తీర్థకమండలం అభిభ్రదంగదం ఖడ్గం హైమం చర్మేక్షరాన్ నృపాం పుష్పగస్తోనిద స్త్రీభి స్మయమానశ్చ వగ్దిభి విరేజే భగవాన్ రాజన్ గ్రహైశ్చంద్రమివోదిదాం భ్రాతిభిర్నందిద సోభి సోత్సవాం ప్రావిశల్ పురీం ప్రవేశ రాజభవనం గురుపత్ని సుమాతరం గురున్ వయస్యావరజాన్ పుజిత ప్రత్యభూజయ వైదేహీ లక్ష్మణశ్చైవ యథావల్ సముపేయదు పుత్రాన్ సుమాదరస్థాస్తు ప్రాణాంసనమివోథిద ఆరోభ్యాగే విషించంద్యో బాష్పౌఘేర్విజహుశుచాః జడా నర్ముచ్య విధివల్ కులవృద్ధై సమం గురు అద్విషన్యద్యదైవేంద్రం చదు సింధుజలాధిభి ఏమం కృతశిరస్నానం సువాసాం స్రగ్వలంకృత స్వలం కృదై సువాసోభిర్ భ్రాతృభిర్భార్యయా భవౌం అగ్రహీదాసనం భ్రాత్రా ప్రణిపత్య ప్రసాదిత ప్రజాసుధర్మ నిరతో వర్ణాశ్రమ గుణాన్వితాః జుగోప పితృవద్రామో మేనిరే పితరం చదం త్రేతాయం వర్తమానాయం కాలకృత సమోభవల్ రామీరగ్ని ధర్మజ్ఞే సర్వభూత సుఖావహే వనాని నద్యో గిరయో వర్షాణి ద్వీప సింధవా సర్వే కామధుగామాసన్ ప్రజానాం భరదర్షభా నాదివ్యాదిజరాగ్లాని దుఃఖశోకభయక్లమా మృతిశ్చానిచ్చదాం నాసీద్రామే రాజన్యదోక్షసి రామచంద్రస్ అడ్మినిస్ట్రేషన్ అయోధ్య ఇస్ ఎక్స్ప్లెయినింగ్ ఆ దివ్యాదిజరాగ్లాని దుఃఖశోకభయక్లమా మృతిశ్చానిచ్చదాం నాసీద్రామే రాజన్యదోక్షసి None of this adhi, vyadhi. Adhi means the disease for the mind. Vyadhi is disease for the body. Jara, old age. Dukkha shogha bayaklama, none of these dukkham distresses and lamentation existed. What else? Mrityishchan ichchadam nasi. That only when you desire to leave the world, you have to leave. When you want to leave. Not forced to leave. ఏకపత్ని వ్రతధరో రాజర్షి జరిదశుజి స్వధర్మం గ్రహమే దీయం శిక్షయన్ స్వయమాచరల్ ప్రేమానువృత్యాశీన ప్రశయావనదాసది ధియా హ్రియా జభావజ్ఞాం వర్తు సీతాహరల్మనాం శ్రీమద్భాగవతీ మహాపురాణే పరమహంసం సంహితాయాం నామస్కందే రామచరితే దశమోధ్యాయ సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం గోవింద గోవింద సో ఐ విల్ స్టాప్ దే టుడే It's now 7:15. And if there's any questions, that's all. We can start next Sunday.
One of we'll Rama's administration that you actually were saying.
Yes.
And what I wanted to actually say was that when Ram actually killed Ravana, came back to Ayodhya, and became
yes.
the sovereign, you were saying his administration was perfect, but the people in Ayodhya weren't content with him bringing back Sita to the throne. It must have been only after when Sita went into the earth did the people be fully content, because they actually they never regretted what they actually said, and that was the reason why Sita herself decided instead of ruining the Sun dynasty, that she, with Ram's permission, left the palace.
Yes.
So I'm saying, after she gave herself to the earth, then everything must have been perfect for the people.
You mean that?
Because they always had this backlash on saying that Sita wasn't pure.
Well, everybody did not complain about Sita. Only that washerman who complained about Sita caused the problem. Sita's, most of the Ayodhya Vasis, they were happy to accept Sita, because when Valmiki came back, I mentioned this in the beginning of Ramayanam, how Valmiki wrote Ramayanam. He brought Sita Devi back to the palace in Ayodhya. And he told Ramachandra, accept her now. That is my demand, he said to Ramachandra. So that time, in the palace, Ramachandra consulted Vasishtha and many others, what is the next thing to do. And the people, representatives, the people who are present there, they all unanimously requested Ramachandra that Sita Devi should be brought back into the palace. So from this you can see that the that one particular washerman who did not, who somehow due to some reason spoke ill about Sita Devi, and he had to take birth again later, as you know, in Krishna's pastime. It was the same washerman when Krishna beat him to death when he went to see Kamsa, and he said, this washerman is not yet got rectified. He has to be finished once for all. So Krishna killed him and got him rectified. So that washerman spoke against Sita Devi. But apart from that, general class of people were not happy for leaving Sita Devi on her own. But Ramachandra gave more importance to this one person speaking against, that questioned his administration, in other words, Ramachandra's values. And that is why Sri Shugan says there in these verses, what I read, one of the verses, he says that the exact words I will repeat it to you, because Sri Shugan also didn't agree with what Ramachandra did. That is how it is. But he says there that if you look verse number 11 in the 10th chapter, what does he say? രക്ഷോധമേന ഭഗവത് ദ്വിനയ സമക്ഷം വൈദേഹരാജദുഹദയഭയാഭിധായം ഭ്രാത്രാവനേ കൃപണവൽപ്രിയയാ വിമുക്ത സ്ത്രീ സംഗീനാം ഗതിമിതി ഹൃദയം ശചാര. That if you become too principled in your life, particularly in relationship with religious principles and in your relationship with the opposite sex, in other words, for the men, the women, or women, the men, the other way. In these things, extremism is not good, according to Sri Shugan. And Ramachandra carried this too far, he felt. This is Sri Shugan's opinion. Don't take that as the ultimate thing. Sudeva Goswami is saying that Ramachandra, Sri Sanghinam, he says, if you get too much concerned about your purity to such an extent that it can cause problems also, while... Of course, he was not criticizing Ramachandra. What he was trying to say was, through Ramachandra, for us to learn a lesson, not that Ramachandra was implicated in any of these things, as he mentioned before, Ramachandra is not doing anything. It's all Sita Devi's activities in a, manifested in this world. But as he mentioned here, that in Kamam and Dharmam, Dharmam is religious principles. If you simply follow religious principles, not understanding ultimately what these principles are meant for, in other words, principles are meant for to keep you in the right track. But your mind should eventually get attached to Krishna or to Ramachandra's lotus feet. Otherwise, all these rules and regulations, if you keep all the time talking about it, that won't help. So to get extreme on rules and regulations is not a good thing. There will be always criticism in this world, no matter how perfectly you do. That is the nature of the material world. So Sri Shugan is saying there, that if you follow this Ramachandra's route, this can happen to you also. That one has to learn to separate it out from what is the right thing to do in all these circumstances. Particularly in the case of religious principles, as well as in our man's association with women. It should not go to that extreme that you become a victimized by the very principle itself, like what has happened. So few things Sudeva Goswami has mentioned about Ramachandra like that in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Parishad Maharaj also was inquisitive to hear from Sri Shugan for this reason, how Sri Shugan saw things, unlike Valmiki, because Valmiki doesn't say these things. Valmiki was all the way for to protect Sita Devi because she was more compassionate to Sita Devi. And Sita Devi's plight was very much disturbing to Valmiki, and that is why Valmiki went back to the palace and told Ramachandra to accept her back again. And all that story with Lava and Kusha and all that comes later. But Ramachandra, through this example, has shown the world that in dharmam and kamam, one should not become too much, too much affected by the principle itself. Rather, one should learn to perform a moderation in these things. Otherwise, it will disturb the society also. Sometimes, like Ramachandra, this particular activity against Sita Devi was a very high-handed thing to reject her. And because of that, Sita Devi, the whole Ramayanam, particularly the Uttara Ramayanam, the later half of Ramayanam, is story of tears, nothing but tears. Sita Devi pregnant, sending her to the forest like this, in that condition. I mean, whatever may be the washerman has spoken, ultimately there is another element to this, to be compassionate to her in her present state of body condition. But Ramachandra, no, strictly. And eventually also discarded Lakshmana in the same way. So what do we learn? We learn from this that in these matters, there is another sense, common sense one has to apply, rather than simply enforcing the law so strictly and saying that looks like closer to a fundamentalist idea than showing a realistic attitude in that case. So that is how in Ramayanam is discussed in the Bhagavatam about it.
In the Ramachandramanas, Lord Shiva is actually talking to his wife Parvati about the Ramayana. But then he takes another analogy on how he picked up the Ramayana, was from Kaka Bhushuni to Garuda.
Yeah, Ramayanam has so many versions. You cannot say how many versions got. And the Atma Ramayanam is one of the top ones because it's written by Vedavyasa Maharshi himself, apart from the Valmiki's Ramayanam. But then there is, in all languages in India, there is Ramayanam written by, there is no poet who hasn't at least put something into Ramayanam himself. So there you will always find different versions of Ramayanam, which changes, somewhat changes. But ultimately the story will be the same. But it might have come through different stages. And Tulsidas ji has added on his own realizations because he was a great devotee of Lord Ramchandra. So he has added on his realizations because as much as Krishna's devotees relate with Krishna, Ramchandra's devotees relate with Ramchandra also. And Ramchandra gives them extra realizations which they will obviously incorporate into their compositions. And all these personalities like Tulsidas ji and all, when they wrote Ramcharitamanasam, they had such high state of ecstasy in Rama consciousness or Ramchandra's mercy they had, such that they were able to compile them. Otherwise they couldn't have done that. So that is why we are finding these slight differences. It's a different realizations of different great souls, personalities. But originally from Valmiki it has begun. Forgot to mention something. When Ramayanam was compiled and Vishwamitra came to the palace, and I've lost track. The Ramayanam story is like this, that Ramachandra was totally renounced in the palace. He was sitting like that, not interested in anything. So Vishwamitra told Vasishtha that now you should instruct him on spiritual life, because Ramachandra is ready for spiritual life because of the renunciation he had. And Vasishtha Muni instructed Ramachandra on spiritual life. And that goes into 32,000 verses. So actual Ramayanam, what we have here is 24,000 from Valmiki and 32,000 from Vasishtha. Together it is 56,000 verses available. But what they did was, they separated this Vasishtha's instructions because it is pure spiritual knowledge. So highly transcendental knowledge, very difficult even to understand. Probably only Ramachandra can understand, nobody else could understand. It's so difficult. And it is known as Jnana Vasishtam. Because Vasishtha Muni wrote this, it's also known as Jnana Vasishtam or Yoga Vasishtam. These two names, the same thing is known. It is still available. This book is available, 32,000 verses. But they have separated it this from Ramayanam, and it is called, because Vasishtha Muni was compiled this, it was called Jnana Vasishtam. The jnanis who follow that process, they have decided, because it's too big to handle, 24,000 Ramayanam itself is big enough. But 32,000 pure spiritual knowledge is more difficult to digest. So what they did was they summarized it and they made what is known as Laghu Yoga Vasishtam, which is about 6,000 verses. They have compressed it. You know, like WinZip program. You compress it, isn't it? So they compressed it in the WinZip into 6,000 verses. So this is another side of Ramayana. Ramayanam, if you can study whole life like Bhagavatam, you can study. But the spiritual knowledge in the Ramayanam is so difficult to understand. And also, the sweetness of Bhagavatam is not there. Sweetness is there for those who are such great devotees of Ramachandra and who are in that relationship with Ramachandra. They enjoy Ramayanam very much. It's difficult to compare Ramayanam and Srimad Bhagavatam. Two different sages speaking. One is Valmiki, the other one is Sudeva Goswami. Two different personalities. And one about Krishna, other one about Ramachandra. Both equally powerful personalities. So how do we compare? But as and when you read these two great literature, you see how much spiritual life it has got to offer in this world. How much spiritual powerful it is, the spiritual life. And once you follow that path, you have no time for studying anything in the material world. You reject everything automatically. But material, when it becomes purely, you feel that this material knowledge is nothing but except to fill the belly. That's all it's worth for. Nothing else. It can't offer anything what the spiritual literature can offer. That's why even after millions and millions of years, Ramayana is still studied and thought about and scrutinized by the scholars and devotees in depth. For this reason, because the spiritual knowledge in Ramayana is so high, as I mentioned, Ahalya's prayers, I only mentioned two now, Ahalya's and Parashurama's prayers. If you just read them in Adhyatma Ramayana or Valmiki's Ramayana, you can read both. All these places, if you read them. Adhyatma Ramayana, the more interesting thing is, because Vedavyasa Maharshi was more determined to bring the spiritual principles from Valmiki's Ramayana. He took it out and elaborated it in detail in Adhyatma Ramayana. Adhyatma Ramayana is more spiritually geared rather than Valmiki Ramayana. Valmiki Ramayana is a long story where Valmiki is presenting, keeping Sidadevi at heart. He is writing this Ramayana and persuading Ramachandra to take her back. Ramachandra said, I can't do it in this, but I will do it in my next appearance. And that is why in the 10th canto you will see that Valmiki was asked to come back to Ayodhya, to the spiritual world. Valmiki said, no, I would have to see yourself, both of you together. Only then I will go back to the spiritual world. Everybody else went back. And Lord Shiva, Anjaneya Swami and Valmiki, three great devotees. Valmiki said, I won't go back. I will stay here till I see you and Sita Devi together. And then Ramachandra told him, you will have to wait till the next Yuga. Treta Yugam, it was then. Now Dwapara Yugam, you have to wait. At the end of Dwapara Yugam, when Krishna came, Sita Devi came as Rukmini, and Rukmini joined Krishna. After that, Valmiki decided to go back. So up to that time, he was willing to wait. What else? When Valmiki had to send a message, remember the famous letter she sent to Krishna, to Dwaraka, who carried the letter? There is a Brahmana mentioned there. All the scholars agree that Brahmana is nobody else than Valmiki. So you can see how this spiritual knowledge and spiritual activities goes from one yuga to another yuga, not from one decade to another decade. This is how that relationship is. So long a period of time covered. Valmiki had agreed to wait. And when the Brahmana came to see Krishna at the last minute with the letter from Rukmini Devi, Krishna knew who it was. But in the Bhagavatam, never mentioned, you are addressing him as Valmiki. That is the beauty in the Bhagavatam. Sri Shugan, when he points out this fact to Parikshit, that Brahmana, who that Brahmana is, Parikshit was absolutely stuck because he was thinking that Valmiki was willing to wait that long because Valmiki could not accept that separation between Ramachandra and Sita Devi. That was his, at any cost he wouldn't accept that. That was the type of personality Valmiki was. They are and here we are. Hare Krishna. All glory Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah.
last week I mentioned about the four divisions. Remember what I mentioned? What are they? What's the first one?
The Brahmin.
Yeah.
The Kshatriyas.
And?
The Shudras.
And?
The
Vaishyas. Yeah. The, in order it is Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. Now, that division is, as I mentioned to you before, that it's very logical. You look everywhere, you will find the same division in one way or the other. It exists all over the world. But because it's been in practice in the Vedic society for such a long time, that people accepted that, that these different functions of these four different divisions. In the Bhagavatam, when it is mentioned in a different way. They will say like this, that the face of Krishna is Brahmanas, the hands are the Kshatriyas, the belly is the Vaishyas, and the legs are the Shudras. That is how it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Why it is mentioned like that is that in the Vedic concept, Krishna also is a person, but at the same time, he also covers the whole creation. And in that creation, everything has a place of its own. And that is why it mentions there that the role of these different divisions in the society, for example, the Brahmanas have the responsibility of developing spiritual life. Spiritual life is knowledge. Other material life is not considered to be knowledge. It is basically the other way. It's considered to be ignorance. So if somebody is developing materially too much, then that means he is going on the wrong direction. You will see in Ramayana and Bhagavatam, this is discussed in different ways at different times, especially in the prayers by the great devotees. When they pray to Krishna, they will mention this specifically. Particularly in Ramayana, this has come about again and again, that why spiritual knowledge is more important than the materialistic knowledge. Materialistic knowledge is, we will discuss that when you talk about Ramayana, so many things there. But what I was trying to say was that this Brahmana, he had, the education system was organized in such a way that Brahmana's responsibility was to give knowledge to others. This is how they were trained to think like that. Not like in the modern university style education, because from the Vedic viewpoint, this kind of education is troublesome, because you can see that when the children were small, 5 or 6 years old, they were sent to Gurukulam. They didn't have big universities like today. Mostly the learned Brahmanas, they ran small groups of students. They were maintained and looked after by them. And they spent something like 15 years with the teacher. And the same teacher will teach them all the subjects, what they have to know, what is related to the knowledge, to spiritual knowledge. So by the time they are 18 or 20, when they come out of from the Gurukulam, from the teacher, they will have a very good understanding of what is life meant for, what one should do in one's life. Because you can see, today you go to school, you go to college everywhere, and when you come out, all you have got is a certificate. But you really don't know what to do in life after that. Then, as the society tells you, you go looking for jobs here, looking for jobs there, then you get a salary, get your mortgage, get married, then all that life goes on like that. But this is not the end of life. Life is not simply to be wasted like that, just to get a job and earn money. That is, of course, there, just you have to live in this world. But there has to have something higher than that in life. And that is what was taught in the Vedic times. Because as far as they were concerned, just eating and living in this world is not the whole problem of this life. This is only a part of this whole life. But the major life is man has been given a higher intelligence to understand things higher than which no other species have got. So this opportunity is only in human life. You don't get it anywhere else. That is why it is stressed so much again and again in all the Puranas, Upanishads, everywhere, that human life should be utilized for understanding something higher values in life. Otherwise, you have just wasted your life. That's all. Because as far as eating, sleeping and things are concerned, animals are also eating, animals are also sleeping. So where is the difference between us and them? We have been given the special intelligence to think something better than that. And that is why that kind of education is important. And when that education is not offered, then it makes the children's life worthless. life worthless. So this is the reason that you will find that in the Vedic times, this special kind of education was offered, number one. Number two, this education which was offered those days was offered in such a way that the person who offered, given the knowledge to the students, never accepted anything in return. This is very important. Reason for that is, vidya or knowledge is something which Krishna has given to us, and it is not to be marketed anywhere. If once you start doing that, it loses its potency anytime. Krishna has given to us some understanding of what is creation, what is Krishna, what's our relationship with everything. Krishna expects that us to understand that and give it to others as well. And that is what is expected of us. Whereas if we use Krishna's knowledge for making money in this world, then that is not going to work. It will not have any impact on the people. The Brahmanas, therefore, they lived so simple. A simple lifestyle they followed because they didn't need to get much money. They maintained a simple lifestyle. They didn't have to disturb others for their maintenance. This is the reason that they... And therefore, people had to respect them for this, that austerity. They were living for others' purpose, others' sake. They protected the Vedas. Protected means, how do you protect the Vedas? Not by putting them in the books and keeping it in the shelf. That is not how you protect the Vedas. You protect the Vedas by chanting the Vedic mantras every day. And it was the most difficult job, because to chant properly, you have to be trained properly. And to train and to maintain that tradition for so many thousands of years is very, very difficult job. And even today, according to the information available today, many of the Vedic suktas are not available even today. Most of them have gone completely out of... they are not available anymore. Hardly out of the many thousands of suktas that is in the four Vedas, only about 1,108 of them are available today. And the many, many acharyas are trying to protect them, even what is available today of these Vedic mantras. To chant them and to sustain them and to train them. Because if everybody goes to schools and colleges and study other things, who will study the Vedic literature? So because of this problem, there were efforts from many organizations to maintain this Vedic tradition somehow or the other, so that we don't lose everything. Now, unlike all other religions in this world, where you have seen other religions like Christianity, Islam, and so many other religion divisions, they were all started by one person, isn't it? Because Jesus Christ started Christianity and Muhammad started Islam religion. So, although they may say that that's also an older religion, unlike the Vedic religion, Vedic concept, what you should remember is that this has no beginning. This has no beginning. Sometimes we say it is Sanatana Dharma, but Sanatana Dharma is even not enough to stress this important point, that why this is beginningless. It has no beginning. For example, in the beginning, because there was no other religion, this was the only process that existed in this world. For millions of years, people followed this process. And therefore, there was no need for a name for it. You give only a name to somebody when there is two or three things, because you have to identify each with a number or with a name, something like that. So, for example, if I give you some little example, somebody comes in and tells me, Rama has come. So, I ask you straight away, which Rama has come? Now, why do I have to ask which Rama? Because if there are so many Ramas, that's why I have to ask so many, which Rama has come. But if somebody knows that there's only one Rama, then there is no need for me to ask that question. Immediately I understand the person I refer to is the same what he's referring to. So this is the reason why Vedic religion never had any name any time. But it was only later on, some of acharyas have given this name, Sanatana Dharmam. That means eternal occupation of the individual in this world, living entity. That is how this name Sanatana Dharmam has come into existence. Prior to that, that also has come much later. This name was given to it by the acharyas, just to identify with something. But strictly speaking, there is no name for this religion. This Krishna consciousness or Vedic philosophy has no beginning. It is no beginning. It existed all the time. Millions and millions of years it's been going on. And if you go back into Ramayanam, this is why Ramayanam makes it more interesting. Because the history of Ramayanam is such, it's not a very recent history. It's a very old history, running back into Treta Yugam. And the personalities who come in Ramayanam, they all had a very long life. For example, Dasharatha has lived right up to about 80,000 years he was living. Can you imagine somebody is living 80,000 years? Here we are amazed by 100 years, isn't it? Somebody lives 100 years, you get some certificate from the queen for living 100 years. In this country, that's the system, I understand, that you get some sort of recognition for 100 years. But Dasharatha was living somewhere around 80,000 years. And Dasharatha had a good friend, a bird. In the Ramayana, it specifically mentioned Jadayu. Jadayu was Dasharatha's close friend. And Jadayu was about 60,000 years when he met Ravana, was taking Sita away. Jadayu was 60,000 years old. So you can imagine how what we perceive today, life is only 100 years. That is today's story. But it's not necessarily like this to be all the time. According to the time gap, time span, things can change so much. This is what you have to remember. In the modern history, they won't teach you all these things. They'll only tell you life started about 2,000 years ago in this world. And from then on, how before that everybody was living in the caves and they didn't know anything else. All kinds of strange ideas they will tell you. And you will wonder, can that be true? It can never be true. Because history, Ramayanam, this is what I'm saying. Ramayanam and Bhagavatam, Mahabharatam, these three books, sometime you should read and think through it all the time. Because they will tell you the real history of this world, how far the history goes back to, how many millions of years it goes back to. So there is a lot to learn in all these things. And when you read and think, that's the most important thing. Just knowing the story is not enough. Knowing the story is good, but at the same time, if you think more about matters related to the history of the world, those who are interested in history, Bhagavatam, Ramayanam and Mahabharatam will give you the history of this creation, where it began from all. And then that will deepen your understanding of things as well, rather than simply sticking to the modern history. And you see, why we are saying this so important is that if you study Puranas, what is the difference between Puranas and the modern? Puranas is nothing but history. Bhagavatam, Ramayanam is all history only. But the difference between Ramayanam, Bhagavatam, Mahabharatam and the modern history is, in the modern history, for example, Hitler. Hitler came and did a lot of things and he died and gone, finished. What did we learn? Nothing we learned from that. But Puranas are not like that. Everything you go through Puranas, you will find that they are teaching us certain things, important things in life, how to live in this world. But I have never seen, by studying Hitler's history, what to do in this world at the end. One must come and go, another Hitler will come after some time. So that kind of study is useless. If you're studying something, from that you have to get some benefit at the end. Otherwise, what's the point? Wasting time. So this Ramayanam and Mahabharatam, if you study properly, it will stimulate your understanding how to live a proper life in this world and how to deal with the situation in this world properly and maintain that spiritual life in one's own personal life. So this is what is coming from this literature. So three literature, Ramayanam, Mahabharatam and Bhagavatam particularly, is important to read. And as much as time allows you in your daily life, you should spend for that. That's important. And that will, as you are reading and thinking about it, you will get a lot of understanding why in the olden days, I'm talking about olden days, millions of years back, why people lived in a different way and what they benefited from that. So there is a lot to offer from Ramayanam particularly. Ramayanam is, although it is only 24,000 verses, as we say, Valmiki has compiled, and the personalities in Ramayanam is teaching us to understand this world in much deeper sense, because most of our understanding of this world is very, very limited. We see everything on the surface. We don't see anything deeper than that. But the deeper understanding comes from studying, hearing and thinking about these persons whom you see on the television screen in Ramayanam. When you see on the television would not present you the things what you should actually understand from Ramayanam. They'll tell you the story and present it to you in a nice way that you can relate with the story. But unless you think about all these things, why all these different personalities in Ramayanam have done like this, in a different way they have acted, what was their background, and what caused them to react in this way. Each one of these personalities in Puranas, they have something to tell you. And unless you take understand that, then otherwise you have not understood it properly. That is how it is to be understood. So, any questions? Because I don't know what much time we have, but yeah.
My daughter saw a picture of Jatayu and
yes.
Ram together.
Yes.
And that they showed a four-armed form of Jatayu coming
yes.
up from the bird form.
Yes.
So the first question was, who was Jatayu in his last life? Did someone curse him to become a bird?
I don't know what his Jatayu's past life was, but Jatayu had a very close relationship with the Chola dynasty, with the Surya Vamsham particularly. And Dasharatha was his personal friend.
Okay.
And in many instances, Dasharatha was protected by Jatayu.
Okay.
Jatayu protected Dasharatha in many, many instances. He used to take Dasharatha from the ground and go very high in the sky
okay.
when Dasharatha was attacked by other people.
Okay.
So, Jatayu, this Jatayu's relationship with Dasharatha comes later when, as I mentioned before, Ramachandra actually performed the funeral rites of Jatayu
yes.
because of his because the gratitude he had for Jatayu
mm-hmm.
for fighting against Ravana and losing both his wings, and he fell down, being almost killed, and he died by Ravana. So you can see that Jatayu not only lived a long time, 60,000 years they say. He was saying to Ravana that I am 60,000 years old when he was being killed
yeah.
by him,
yeah.
and only because Jatayu flew up at that time
right.
that Sita Devi thought at that moment that if I take my earrings and bangles and anklets and throw it away, at least Jatayu will mention this to Ramachandra later when they start searching for him. So these histories goes into thousands, hundreds and thousands of years. And that's it's so different than the modern history, which is related to something like 1,000 years or 2,000 years. And it broadens the vision of our time span. You see, two things, time and space, these are two things very difficult to understand. It's such a relative thing. When you are talking about a few years here, we think, oh, 50 years ago something happened, we think it's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
50 years is nothing from you consider the millions of years what has happened in Ramayana. So everything is a relative thing, how you look at it.
Yeah.
And the same thing with space also. Very difficult to understand how space affects us. For example, if there is a forest fire going on in Australia, it comes in the television news and all, we think, oh, it's going on in Australia, what does it matter to us? That's how our attitude is. As soon as we know the forest fire is in Portugal or Spain, we start getting a bit worried. Why? Because the closeness towards us. As soon as the fire happens in Hertfordshire somewhere, we'll be very concerned about it. Is it coming to Radlett or Lechmere Heath? We'll think like that. But if it is in Lechmere Heath, we'll be much more worried about it. So why? Because of the proximity, of the closeness of the space between us. And our mind is such that we get affected by it somehow or the other. The nature of the mind is like that. For example, if somebody, there's a fight going on in London, we won't be too worried about it. But if somebody is fighting in the temple courtyard somewhere, we'll be concerned about it. And if you go home, and if you find somebody is fighting inside the house, how much will you be affected by that? So everything is, this time and space, two things, if we can understand it properly, how much it affects our way of thinking and way of interacting. Great jnanis, particularly the liberated souls in this world who have gone through the jnanamarga process, they are not affected by time and space. This is their greatness. Because in their process of jnanamarga, they develop this quality of how to control the mind unaffected by time, unaffected by space. That is possible because that is their process. Process is such. And they will always say this, that if you learn this process, how to deal with time and space, you have more or less won the battle in this world to a large extent, not being disturbed by things of time and space, because after all, they will think that it is the time, the time flow of time, in that all these things do happen. And as far as space is concerned, they are always conscious of from creation to the end of the destruction of the planet. So in that, if you singing on a large time span, all these little things, what comes and disturbs us in our daily life, has not much of a significance. But what happens is, because we get so trapped up in this daily practice lifestyle, we forget all the other thing. Our mind is totally focused on what happens on everyday, day-to-day basis. Why? Because it is everything in relationship with our own body. We are thinking all these things. But if you, jnanis have this great quality, then they can go beyond than that and see things on a higher plane. So this is why it's necessary to read Ramayanam. In Ramayanam, this kind of personalities come and they tell you a lot of things relating with time and space. 2,000 years is nothing in this world. What's 2,000 years? It's a very, very short time in this whole creation. As I mentioned before, Brahma's lifetime is, Brahma's one day is 4.32 billion years. It's one day. One night is another 4.32, so it's 8.64 billion human years is Brahma's one day. So 365 days like that, that makes one year. So multiplied by 365, and similarly 100 years, if you multiply by another 100, so that is his whole lifespan in number of years, human years. Which means, what does that mean? It means that as long as there is one Brahma, one universe also survives. So when Brahma dies, the universe also is finished. So when the modern scientists are trying to find out how long this universe will last, they have no idea, because in the Vedic literature these things are already clearly mentioned. The lifetime of one Brahma is the same as the life of the universe. When Brahma is finished, universe is also finished. Then the next universe comes in, the next Brahma takes over from there. So you can see how. And at the end of Brahma's life, everybody goes back to the spiritual world, no matter what it is. All the living entities goes back to the spiritual world. But because it is such a long time in terms of human years, it appears to us that it's eternal. That is how it is. It appears eternal to us because the time involved is so high. So everything is relative. In terms of time and space, if you can relate with things, it gives you an understanding how these things are important, time and space and life.
Mentioned before that Vedic religion or Vedic it is called, the Sutta's name is Sanatana, means
yes, eternal.
Eternal and yeah. Means always existing.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the name itself is not enough, you told me.
Mm.
And the second question is, and is the main proper explains, Sanatana Dharma means, Sanatana means one who accepts
yes.
The supremacy of Krishna. As me, this one, the family also, based on Vedic culture,
yes.
They accept the father as the supreme.
Yes.
Similarly, means it has been one who accepts the supreme authority as Krishna, this was named as Sanatana.
Yes, that is one explanation to that word, Sanatanam. Mm. Sanatanam basically means eternal. That is what it means. It has neither beginning nor end. In fact, Prabhupada took that word from Ramanujacharya's Sribhashyam commentary, the Sanatana Dharma. Prabhupada mentions there that Ramanujacharya gave this definition, and that is how Prabhupada puts it there. So that Sanatana Dharmam, because there is no another word more appropriate than that to give this process. And it is not one person who has founded it. It has been revealed to the sages who have advanced in knowledge and yoga and renunciation, and through their higher sense of knowledge going beyond Jagra, Sopnam and Sushupti, the three states, they've gone beyond than that, and their God realized this knowledge by Krishna's mercy. They got this knowledge and they revealed to us through the Vedic mantras. That is how the Vedas came into existence in this world. And in due course, they were classified as Rig Vedam, Yajur Vedam, Sama Vedam and Atharva Vedam. And then the Upanishads, not enough that, because most of the Vedic the mantras are related to the Karmagandam, reference to the performing sacrifices. So that same thing in the knowledge form, when he wanted to expand, Vedavyasa Maharshi put them into the Upanishads. And the Upanishads came into existence. And After that, when he wrote Brahma Sutra also, he had this thing in his mind that he wanted to present the highest philosophy in a way that would be understood by the Brahmanas, for them to study and pursue further the knowledge. But later on, when he felt compassion for people like us who could not understand any of those things, he decided that he should compile the Puranas. That is how Puranas came into existence. So when he wrote all the Puranas, he came to the conclusion that the message should be there, what is in the Vedas. The same message should be available for us also to understand in a way that, because you see, everything when it's spoken in the form of story, people like it. Isn't it? It's natural in this world. People like stories. Nobody wants to be told all the time, instructed about things. And because neither we have that enthusiasm or intelligence in us to understand the value of spiritual life and to follow that route easily. Left to ourselves, we will easily follow the material way of life, because that is easier for us. If we can get something to eat and somewhere to sleep, we are satisfied. Most of our needs are met with that. But Brahminical thoughts are not like that. Generally, with Brahminical qualities, Krishna says in the Bhagavadam, there is a special reference to that when Krishna says, Brahmanasthi dehoyam shudra kamaya neshyade. Krishna says, if you get a Brahmana's body, a Brahminical culture in you, it should not be utilized for just for eating and sleeping, in other words. And if you have seen Brahminical culture any time in your life, you will notice this also, proper Brahminical culture, that they have no attachment. They can act without attachment to the body. That means that normally our nature is that, I'm talking about ordinary people like us. When we get up, first thing is we think about what should I eat today. This is the first priority, householder or a brahmachari, it doesn't matter who it is. What to eat today? Where is the feast? What time is the feast? This is the kind of things. You know. After we have eaten, what's the next priority? How can I take some rest? The next thing is sleeping. So eating, sleeping, and then after sleeping, the next thought comes, when is the next meal? So isn't it? It's just common life. Most of our life is like that. At least my life is like that. I don't know about others. But these are common in our way of life. Eating, sleeping, eating, sleeping. These things are not enough in spiritual life. Spiritual life begins when you give up this in a major to large extent. In other words, sleeping is concerned. First of all, you should not sleep in the daytime. If you sleep in the daytime, it will develop a lot of tamogunam in the body. That's very, very important. You can talk to very advanced sannyasis. They will tell you why you should not sleep during the day. Because when you find a difficulty with chanting, mainly it is because of this habit of sleeping during the day. That once you sleep during the day, it will develop mode of ignorance. Tamogunam will build up in the body in a large scale. And then it takes a long time to come out. What happens? You sleep during the day, you don't sleep at night. Then you turn around to other things to find some pleasure somewhere else. So all kinds of complications come. So sleeping daytime completely, no. Even in the night time, if you have to sleep, if you want to advance spiritual life, you have to limit the time of hours of sleep. Maximum 5 to 6 hours is enough, according to the less you can sleep, it's better. But some sleep one need. After all, body cannot function otherwise. So, but you have to minimize it to the minimum. 5 or 6 hours maximum is sufficient. That's one thing. As far as eating is concerned, one should not be too particular about what one gets to eat. That is another thing one has to take care of. That some people are very particular. If I don't have 3 or 4 sabjis and 2 sweets and chapatis and rice, everything in my table, then my meal is not good enough. I get into all false conclusions. But that's fine as long as you don't want to come to spiritual life. But if you come to spiritual life and you want to make progress, this thing has to come to a stop. You should be satisfied with some food, whatever that can sustain your body. And that attitude we have to build up early life, early days in life. Otherwise what will happen is, after 30, 40 years in householder life, eating a lot of feasts all the time, it becomes very difficult to get that consciousness in life. So that's why these two things, eating and sleeping, has to be restricted to the very minimum to get some progress in spiritual life. And then simultaneously the sadhana along with that will give the strength for the rest of it. Yeah.
You mentioned in the beginning of the class this Brahmanical,
yes.
Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya,
yes.
etc. You can find them all over.
Yes, yes. It exists everywhere. I can tell you how it exists. Basically, Brahmana means thoughtful nature, thoughtfulness. But, and similarly, Kshatriya means Rajogunam. Raja, the word Raja comes from Rajogunam. Rajogunam is the origin of the Rajas. Yeah. So you will see that they have, those who have that nature of Rajogunam in them, they will also have this nature of controlling others. They want to control everybody else. So, this one other thing, Vaishya means what? Vaishya means basically they want to generate wealth all the time, earn money, make more money, endless. Vaishya's desires have no limits. That's how they say. As much as money they make, they still will think because they want to always create more wealth. That's their policy. And Shudra generally satisfied with maintaining the body and serving others. So these four divisions, you can go and see in America, it exists. Because there is a class of people who just like to do work and money and be satisfied with their television and little happiness from family life, that like that. There are other people who are in business, they want to make more money. But the problem is that none of these, what you see in the modern world, strictly follow the Vedic injunctions. They do, but the mentality is there, that's what I'm saying. The mentality of doing this in these four different levels, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. The Kshatriyas are those who are absorbed in the defense and activities related to like that. And similarly, the Brahmanas are the intellectual class who likes to use their intelligence, but misled by the modern the scientific intelligence, so-called. So, four divisions based on intelligence, strength and effort and the service does exist in this world everywhere. And it exists because Krishna's creation is such that these four mentalities will always be there. But the important thing is that even if one has, it does not matter whatever occupation one has. In this age, one should try to develop these Brahminical qualities. Because Brahminical qualities means what? Satogunam. Satogunam means mode of goodness. Mode of goodness means knowledge. Knowledge means liberation from this entanglement. Whereas all the other three, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, they do not help in advancing on the spiritual side of life. That's why it's necessary to maintain that purity, to maintain the knowledge and to progressively go towards Krishna. That is necessary to advance on the Brahminical path. Sometimes due to our own conditioning or our own circumstances, we may have to sometimes do things which are not in principle with the Vedic philosophy or Vedic concepts. But at the same time, as long as one develops that mind inside, in line with the Brahminical thoughts, Brahminical way of life, that will help in advancing in Krishna consciousness. It helps to develop that.
When Hanuman was quite young, why did he try to eat the sun?
Say that again.
When Hanuman was quite young, when he was a baby,
yes.
He went to try and eat the sun. Why did he?
Yes. Hanuman was a brahmachari in the early days. Why that story is mentioned in the Ramayana is for this reason, that in the in Ramayana, Hanuman, the personality, comes as a brahmachari. Brahmachari means, you know what I mean? Celibate life. That means due to his strength of mind. Okay, let me explain this. We have got four things in our control. The physical, body, the mind, the intelligence, and above all, the soul. If all these four things, if you develop properly, you become so powerful that it's beyond your imagination what Krishna has given to us and what we can do with it. So this Hanuman had this great capacity. He succeeded in developing all these four things to a very large extent. His confidence was so high in himself, things what he could do. And his ability and his intelligence was so high as well that when he was a little baby, he saw the sun there and he thought it's a fruit he can catch. And he jumped towards the sun. By that story, what Ramayana is telling us is this, that actually you do not know your strength. I also don't know my strength. But if properly guided and directed, this very body, you can achieve such something tremendous things, what even the modern science can never teach you. It has got so much energy, strength in it on its own. But we have to know that product. In those days, people developed them through the yoga, power of yoga, they did that. But in the modern times, we have become so weak in our mind and everything, intelligence, everything, that for us it becomes a little bit difficult to understand. Is that so powerful? But Ramayana will tell you how each of the personalities in Ramayana developed that strength. Some of the things what you read in the Ramayana is unbelievable for us, for today's people to believe, accept it. Why? Because they could not think that a human body could survive so long, 60,000 and 100,000 years. That's one thing. And they could perform such extraordinary activities beyond our imagination. So I'll stop there. We'll start at 5 o'clock Ramayana again. Hare Krishna.